call me in the order. I'll be live. I salute to our flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Council, I've been told by my clerk he did the recordings of the last meeting, and the clerk would really appreciate it if you would use your microphones at all times. So the clerk will now do the roll call using your microphones.
Oh, all the time.
Councilmember Malpezzi.
Here.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Feria.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutchison.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the point in the agenda where the members from the public can come forward and speak to the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. So if you're not on tonight's agenda, some of you are here to talk on things. We'll call on you on the agenda items. Anything that's not on tonight's agenda, you can come forward, speak your name, address if it would be okay. And we have one person that's even signed up ahead of time. So we're very honored to have Patrick Allison here. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. I'll try to eat the microphone. It's the only way I ever get the one person up. Patrick Ellis, 4825 Alderson Road, Birch Bay. You know, this is Birch Bay. One of the council members said, gee, it's nice that you come to these meetings. Well, Birch Bay doesn't have a city, but at least you guys can work to solve your problems. Out there, we just create them. Actually, you create problems, too. I love Google. This is what I found. Well, you know, there's this piece of property that's mentioned in the newspaper about some developer wanting to drain this lake and build on it. The same map shows this piece of property. It's in Ferndale here, and you don't see a lake on it there, do you? But the guy would love to sell the property. He can't. Ferndale has allowed development around the property, and frankly, you know, it happens every place. It even happens in the rural county. Development drains off on property near it, and somebody's got to be responsible for it. Nobody wants to be responsible for it because if Ferndale's responsible for it, you're going to have to dig in some money and buy this car wreck. The trouble is, it's rumored that you're going to buy it, but you're going to offer money for a wrecked car. It's not fair to wreck somebody's car and then offer him $75 for it. We've all had to buy a new one. Well, okay, it's not a car. It's this piece of property, and this is what it looks like right now. Now, during the summer, it looks like a nice meadow. You could build something on it. You could run cows on it. You could do something. And cows don't come with bins. Love to have Ferndale figure out what to do. I know you just can't run out and just spend money needlessly. You have a responsibility for all the people in Ferndale to make sure their money is spent wisely. But people screw up. And you know what? Governments are people and they screw up. The city of Ferndale screwed up on this. You've got to be able to say, all right, we screwed up on this. Yes, we could buy this property. We already have a lake there part of the year. You could use it for drainage. I thought that was a good solution because, you know, any place that we have buildings, you need to have drainage. You need to take care of that. Impacts, I think cities are a good way to take care of impacts. You're a lot better off than a lot of places. You're a lot better off than Birch Bay. Anyways, have fun. What else can I say?
Thank you.
I'll leave this for you. Mr. Zimmerman.
Yeah, Mr. Allersey, your experience with water and sewer out of Birch Bay being on the commission for how many years?
I don't know. Okay. I lost count.
Does Birch Bay, do they have a storm drainage plan out there? I know you have water and
we
sewer.
We finally have one, Bruce, but, you know, for years I've been saying the Romans, maybe you heard this from me, but Romans had this this creating area below them, and they built Rome on seven hills. And they found out that the water was running down on everything. After that, when the Romans would move into the area, a new area, they'd take care of the drainage first. I've had a developer tell me, no, Pat, they took care of the locals first, then they took care of the drainage. But they were very serious about taking care of drainage because they knew it was crucial to development. Here we are. We like to say we're more civilized than the Romans. This is the last thing we take care of. It shouldn't be that way. Any other questions? I'll try to keep the answer shorter.
Okay. These are yours. Thank you. Anything else? Welcome, sir.
That's a hard act to follow. But my name is Johnny Grahams, and I've been wanting to appear here to introduce myself since I was trashed by your new city clerk in the newspaper. And I live in Bellingham, and I'm a judge's signature away from being evicted, so I'm technically maybe homeless, but we share the same court system and law enforcement, and I know those people over there. I appear before the city and county council, and I'm hopeful to get a fair shake, and I believe that I will. And I also have been involved in where the community at large, the whole county, gets to help plan for the new jail, which you're going to be participating in if it comes out here, and provide utilities to. But that's real encouraging for people like myself, who's like an outsider, and that all the people in the community are getting involved in it. And we managed to go on Comcast BTV 10 with the last public hearing after 7 years of planning behind closed doors by the Law and Justice Council. So that's the way to do things in a democratic way, because in that fashion, then the public is behind whatever you decide and sign on to. And but no plan is perfect. And there's for this size jail, it's a big project. The other thing that was kind of on my mind, when I was a kid, I got to play hoops against Jake Locker's grandfather down in Ballard, so I kind of followed this young man coming out of this system here in Ferndale, and in this, they're going to at least have a draft, and everybody's going to say what a sterling character that young man is. And by him staying at the University of Washington, saved their program, made millions of dollars for the university and for the coaches.
1 minute.
And and you should be rightfully proud of that. And thanks for the opportunity. And good night.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else on the public comment period? Welcome.
My name is George Hong. I live at 2396 Douglas Road. A while back, I received a letter from the city stating for me to come to a meeting about Mountain View Meadows waters. The letter stated that there must be a solution to their French drain completely circled around them, and I have an aerial photo if anybody wants to see it. They are still draining 100% of water into my field. Last week it went over the top. I have two sump pumps running down on the Douglas Road because of all this excess water. The solution was not attended to. Nothing was ever done to change that solution to stop that French drain water from running directly into my field. They have a holding pond, but nothing's going into it because it's always empty. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none. Council, I entertain a motion to pass the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, motion passes. Council, I'd like to change two things on the agenda. First, I'd like to go with C2 right after the boards and commissions. I'd like us to discuss the fire district contract and our treasurer and city administrator do that. So C2, fire district contract. And then I'd like, as we get further down the agenda, I believe that we should flip E and F, where we should talk about F before we talk about E, because they're both related to budgetary items. So just we'll flip, and there's more people there for that item, so we'll probably move people up to get a chance to talk. So hopefully that's approval for you. Okay, next up is item C, first quarter boards and commission oral reports. Do we have anyone here for the boards and commissions for oral reports? We do have one. Welcome.
Yeah, Barbara Ingram, 2448 Pheasant Way, here in Ferndale. I'm a member of the Ferndale Art Commission, and basically the Art Commission's been kind of just kind of floating and kind of idling, and we're trying to get things going. So the last meeting on the 19th, we were trying to come up with new ideas, you know, like a felt show or paint the chairs and auction them off, or art and business windows, and maybe paint figures or animals and stuff like that. So we're trying to maybe get more like events and little programs going rather than trying to incur art right now. And also, Sam, our city clerk, received an email from a future art educator. She just started an internship, you know, with the Ferndale High School art students, and so she said she's interested in maybe doing a mural or something with the students somewhere in Ferndale. So now maybe we're starting to maybe get a couple steps ahead, and we'll maybe start getting something besides just the name for the, you know, Ferndale Art Commission, so we'll have something to show for it. So anyway, this is all new. This just came in today, so we haven't had a chance to really discuss it yet, but that's basically what we're kind of up to.
Great. Yes. Questions for the Arts Commission, anyone? No?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the boards and commissions? No, seeing none?
Oh, Tucker's here.
Oh, Councilperson Malfezzi?
I'd like to comment. I'd love the opportunity for the boards and commissions to come give an oral report, but I also think it's important they submit written reports as well. I'm not sure if they were getting away from that or just nobody submitted them this time or what, but I'd encourage us to keep
based on your request, we invited them for oral reports, and that doesn't seem to be a success, so maybe we should go for both. Yeah. The oral report doesn't success. Councilor, you've been passed out a document that will probably open your eyes, upset you. It certainly upset my weekend when our treasurer, coming back from a vacation, decided to work on a Saturday and ruin my Saturday by sending me emails. Pass that forward. I'd have the city administrator talk about it, and then I'll pass one copy to the one press that's here. So we can do that one. You can share that one.
Yeah, as you'd be reading on there, we've actually received the invoice from the fire district for their 2011 assessment, and it's about $165,000 or so more than what we had budgeted. We budgeted 5%, but this increase is actually about 23%. And the reason why, I talked to the fire chief today, and that you're probably all aware that, you know, the city is not part of the fire district. We simply contract with the fire district. So their annual assessment to us is it's simplified, but it's their levy rate times our assessment. So in a simplified way, it's what they would have collected if we were part of the district. So it's pretty much a wash in that regard. The real difference is that, if you may be aware, in this current economic situation, the refineries are reassessed annually by the state. And their valuations go up and down depending on how convincingly they can talk to the Utilities Commission and have them either raise or lower their assessments. And naturally, it's in their best interest to have the lowest assessments possible. Well, for whatever reasons, the assessments out at the refinery dropped rather precipitously in 2010, something like 18% or something like that. The valuation in our city dropped by something like 4%. So as you can see, there was a much larger percentage drop in the valuation of the utilities out at Cherry Point than the tax assessed valuation of the city. So since the fire district assesses their levy district-wide, and since they have a contract with us, they were limited as to what they could levy on a per thousand valuation in the district, but that does not hold to the city. So better or worse, most of that lost revenue that would have been coming in from the refineries is now being made up by the city of Ferndale. One, and you'll read this on the paper there, one of the things that I talked with the fire chief about today, and this is something we'll be talking to them continuously now for probably a little while and getting your input on as well, is that one option, and it's something that the fire district had actually considered last fall, is to actually bring the city into the fire district. That would require a vote of the people of Ferndale to join the fire district. There's advantages and disadvantages. In this case, if we had been part of the fire district, they would have increased their levy rate, but that increased levy rate would have been assessed against all properties in the district. So in many ways, the pain, if you will, of the decrease in valuations and payments from the refinery areas would have been spread across their entire customer base in the district. So us joining, the city of Ferndale joining the fire district might be a bulwark against those large changes in valuations. In the next few years, there's supposed to be hundreds of millions of dollars worth of improvements out at Cherry Point. If we were part of the district, that then would ebb and flow as the valuation goes up and down, because just like us, they look for a dollar amount each year, and it's simply a mathematical computation to come up with a levy rate. Another advantage possible for the city, for the citizens of Ferndale, is that if we belong to the district, citizens of Ferndale could run for and actually vote for county the fire district commissioner. So we could actually have a direct representation on the fire district board if someone in the city so wished to do so. So there's a couple of reasons why we might want to continue talking with the fire district and engage our own citizens about the advantages and disadvantages of joining the fire district. But right now, we are saddled with a rather large increase in our fire contract. We knew it was going to be more than what we had initially budgeted, but naturally, we didn't find out how much more until, well, here just till recently. So it's a situation we continue to talk to the fire district. This naturally comes out of the general fund. We did start the year with a little bit more cash in the general fund than we had envisioned. It's early in the year, so we have a chance right now to closely watch our revenues and perhaps most importantly, closely watch our expenditures and perhaps cut back on some other expenditures should the revenues continue to be soft so we can weather this $165,000 hit. But we'll be talking more with the fire district, we'll be talking more with you, and you'll probably be talking with your constituents as time goes on.
Councilperson Feria?
Can you get a second opinion on the assessment?
Yeah, well, in fact, our finance director, Mark, spent some time today talking with the county assessor as far as the technicalities of how the process works. And I don't know if you can...
Sure. Well, I think the short answer is no, but in my discussion today with Assessor Keith Wilnar, he described in some detail how the refineries, being a business... They're pretty aggressive, as you'd expect any business, large business, to keep those assessed values down for both real property, land and improvements like buildings, and personal property to keep those as low as, if you will, possible. So that those businesses are obviously more aggressive in challenging the assessed values than a typical homeowner might be. So like Greg said, the ConocoPhillips, their particular assessment for both real and personal property went down 18%. And then the city of Ferndale assessed property only went down 4%. And that's because we had new construction and perhaps some annexations, probably nothing major on annexations, but only down 4%. So I don't know that the period, I think the period of challenging assessments is over. I would suggest that's true. But the formula is what it is with our agreement with the fire district. And, you know, like Greg said, we'll continue to work on perhaps the technicalities of the agreement and perhaps joining the district. But it's just kind of a math formula. And, you know, and the history of percent increases, just to hear these, 2007, the fire district bill went up by 11.2%, 2008, 14.4%, then it started moderating, 2009, 7.1%, 4.4%, and then I put in 5% for this year's budget. But 23% was a real shocker. And these assessment values are not available till late December, and, you know, basically we're past the budget, and it's just after the fact every year. So I think the answer, short answer to your question, Councilmember Barnes, is I don't see us getting any, I mean, just the way the formula works, it's not going to happen.
Councilperson Zimmerman and then Goodrich.
We're 10% into the year already. When did you get this? There's no date on this. You received this.
I wrote that today.
I got it Saturday because I asked for the invoices.
Well, I would move that we put this back to the committee, and this is the first we've heard of it, and all of a sudden, boom, here we are in council where we should have it in committee where it should be, you know, financing, admin, or
public, of course.
First one's not. First half isn't due till May. It's a May and November or two payments. Basically, they coincide with our property tax collections, typically April, May, October, November.
This is just informative. I mean, it happened. It's a bill.
So this is
a legitimate bill dated Saturday.
Okay, this just came in Saturday. Boom. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I saw it Saturday.
Councilor Goodrich.
You talked about the advantages and disadvantages of becoming part of the fire district. I didn't understand. Is there a disadvantage to doing that? It seemed like there was more of an advantage.
Yeah, I think for the most part it's an advantage. There are some potential downsides. One is some cities, when they start growing, decide to actually internalize and become their own fire department. So that's something that is certainly, if we were to join the fire district, that would be a much more difficult endeavor if we ever wanted to do that. On the other side of the coin, we would, of course, need to figure out how to get all the equipment and man a fire department. It's a large endeavor.
Like so
Linden has their own. So that's one thing. The other thing is that if right now, if the city becomes part of the fire district, the fire district would actually, through the tax rolls, assess our citizens directly. We then would need to reduce our tax levy rate by a comparable amount, so that way the people in the city aren't being charged twice for the same thing. What that means for our general fund is that we would no longer have the $1 million bill owed to the fire district, but we would no longer get the $1 million in tax revenue, which is kind of a push. All taxing districts are limited as to how much they can levy in dollars per thousand. I think fire districts that have full-time personnel are limited to like $1.50 per thousand. The cities were limited to something like, I want to say $2.60 or something like that. And then when you start adding up the city's levy along with all the junior districts, I think there's an overall statutory limit of like $3.40, some number like that. If we were near, let's say we had a $2.60 limit. If we were near that limit and we annexed the fire district, and we had to lower our levy rate from, say, 260 down to 210, if it was 50 cents, that might have a bigger effect on the city's budget if that extra tax levy, given our $1 billion, because that's pretty much what the city of Ferndale's tax assessed valuation is. If that 50 cents over $1 billion would equal more than what the fire, that maybe the fire district was only levying 43 cents under our contract. So we could, if we were at near the top of our levy limit, it could have a detrimental effect on the other monies that we collect. But we're not anywhere near our levy limit. And so that is not a concern. And given the current health of the city and how we're moving to grow the city, especially in the on the retail sales tax side, I don't see that being too much of an issue. So for the most part, given that we spent 3 hours today looking at the issue, I would say there's probably more advantages to the city than disadvantages. And from our taxpayer standpoint, it might actually be a little bit more on the positive side, because not only would it be somewhat of a push when it comes to what they are paying in taxes, but again, we would have the ability to have our citizens run for, and if not run for, certainly elect fire district commissioners, so there might be more of a direct say.
Before I go to Councilperson Ferriero, 50%, 60% approval?
It would probably be a majority. I need to check into all this stuff, but I think it's a 50%.
Plus 50? Not 60?
I don't think it's a 60%. Okay. I think it would be a simple majority. And I think there would need to be a vote in the city to annex it and possibly a vote in the district to accept us.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. Councilperson Ferriero, then Henson.
I have multiple questions.
Okay.
Are other cities in our county part of a fire district too?
Well, I know Linda has her own. I think Blaine.
Blaine does.
Blaine has her own?
No, Blaine is.
Blaine's in the district? Okay, Blaine's in the district.
Fire District 10, I think.
I'm assuming Nooksack and Sumas are probably in the district.
So it's a mix, probably, is what
you're saying. Yeah.
How much does it affect the average citizen financially?
It probably shouldn't affect the average citizen that much, most notably because the individual tax bill to our, assuming we were part of the district, mm-hmm. the individual tax bill to our citizens would be a blend of the change in value, overall valuation plus new construction. And what's really kept the local fire levy rate as low as it is the huge valuations out at Cherry Point. And believe me, there's not a lot of fires and not a lot of aid calls out at Cherry Point. So from a bang from the buck standpoint, the fire district has, I think even they would say that they have reaped much more in revenue from Cherry Point over the years than they've exerted in direct calls. So it could be that for our citizens, joining the fire district would help smooth out that annual revaluation and the amount of new construction, especially what may be going on out at Cherry Point, could well indeed lower the fire district levy in future years. Chief Russell told me that for every, I think it was something like, for every $100 million in increased valuation, the fire district gets something like $100,000. And it takes about $1 million to run a 24/7 fire department. So you can see that over the next three, four, 5 years, they're talking what, $800 million out at Cherry Point. That's three quarters of a brand new fire station 24/7 somewhere in the county. So you can see how the effect that the refinery has on the fire district is substantial. I don't think Fire District 7 would have nearly the facilities or the personnel or the training budgets they have if not for the refinery. Sometimes much of their equipment is because they have the refinery, but I think that overall it's worked out over time in their benefit financially.
So do you get all the details? Because you've thrown around a lot of approximately's and not really knowing specific numbers. So do you get all of those specific numbers and information and bring it to committee next to look at the details?
Yeah.
And then do you have, is it like a community? Because if this is something they potentially want to put on the ballot in the fall, do you have a community meeting to explain what this means?
This is something we literally started talking about today.
I know that.
So yeah. I think the intention would be, I think it would probably be most appropriate to bring this back to committee, obviously, mm-hmm. because we're not going to solve the issue here tonight. But I'd like to really invite Chief Russell to come to the committee meeting because he understands his finances naturally better than anyone else. And we can now start spending some time in researching other cities that have gone through this and what their experiences have been. And I think once we start refining those sort ofs and approximates to more refined numbers, then we would have more information to go out to our public and probably begin some sort of an information campaign.
Do you know what the fire district thinks about this yet?
Well, the annexation concept, mm-hmm. From talking with Chief Russell, they, the fire district commissioners, had considered approaching the idea of annexing the city last fall.
Okay.
So it's something that they have undoubtedly had more conversations than we have.
I just wouldn't want to pursue something if it's, as far as they're concerned, not
involving them is going to be critical
okay.
in this.
Don't ask the question.
Last person, Hanson.
I do have several questions. First question, Greg, is the calculation that determines how much of our property tax would go to the fire department, is that calculation done every year or is it done one time?
Given our current contract?
No. Let's assume that we became part of the fire district.
If
there's a calculation done as to how much of our property tax would go to the fire department as opposed to the city. Is that calculation done annually or is it done one time?
Yeah. The fire district would go through the same process as we go through. We decide that we want so much dollars next year. And then once we get we tell the county assessor. Once the county assessor puts together the tax assessed valuation, they do the math to say that equals $1.93 a thousand. So you ask for dollars. The county then translates that into a tax assessed tax rate given the total assessed valuation. So the same process would be done with the fire district. They would annually establish what they want in property taxes. The county would then be charged with distributing that throughout the whole district and naturally down to each property.
It gets rather complex then because you really don't know then until that calculation is done how much money you would have available for your city's budget.
Well, you levy a dollar. So I'll make up a number. If just like each year, we say we're going to collect $2 million in property tax. So we tell the county for 2011, we want $2 million in property tax. They then, after the fact, do the math to make it so we get $2 million in property tax. And if our valuation goes up, then our tax rate from the previous year goes down. So it really is. You ask for dollars and you get
the
dollars.
No, I understand that, but you can only increase your budget by 1% by law without going into your bank capacity. You can't. There are then restrictions that are laid out there on that.
Yes.
And if the fire districts goes up because of the evaluation shifts, we could end up with less money.
No, it wouldn't. The fire district is considered a junior taxing district, just like the Dyking districts and the cemetery districts.
Sure.
Because there's a state constitutional limit as to, I think it's $3.60 or $5, I forget what it is. It's some number like that, that when you add up all the senior taxing districts and the junior taxing districts and the schools and the port and all the things like that, it can't go above a certain statutory amount. If the city was at our limit and the fire district was at the limit and the library district was at the limit and the port, we would bust the statutory limit. It's just that's the math all across the state of Washington. What ends up happening is that if everyone's at their limit, the junior taxing districts start getting ratcheted down. So if our limit was $2.40 and we were assessing $2.40, we would still get our $2.40. If the fire district and the library districts and the Dyking districts that are the junior taxing districts that would by law have their levies reduced.
This gets very complex and more so than what we really want to get into tonight, I think. And suffice it to say, I'd like to see some figures on paper and how this would work over a 3 or 4 year period, assuming this or that valuation. My second question basically is to Mark. Mark, what do we carry in our general fund as a cash reserve, approximately percentage-wise?
Our target is 10% of revenues, excluding transfers in and that sort of thing. 10%.
Okay. My, and I'm not 100% sure of this, but I'm about 98% sure that the Fire District 7 carries a cash reserve in excess of 100%. So that their budget, if their budget's $1.5 million, they have at least that much or more in cash reserves. I'm not absolutely sure of what those final figures are. I know that has changed over the years somewhat. My comment is going along these lines. It appears that if they're going it's business as usual, and other areas have to do cutbacks, et cetera. I'm on the WTA board, and the WTA board is facing exactly the same thing. At one point, there was a 100% cash reserve, roughly a $25 million budget, a $22 million cash reserve. The WTA board has chosen to take that down to $12 million because of the economic times. I'm suggesting that in the negotiation, this can't be negotiated for this year, but it certainly can be for next year, and that perhaps part of that negotiation with the fire district ought to be that in the rough times, some of that cash reserve should be used.
We can try to do a time payment plan. I don't know if the district is either able to or willing to go along with it, but that's something to think about.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Thank you. I have three real quick. Mark, this $160,000, this is a result of the work of the assessor, not anything the fire department, fire district has done, correct? This is just the fruit of
the... I don't know if it's all the assessor. We didn't see the total fire district budget for 2011 versus their 2010 actuals. So it's most likely a combination. They're mostly personnel and health care and, of course, equipment.
Okay, so it's two things, really. It's the assessment of the entire area, including the refineries,
yes,
plus their budget.
And their budget increase.
And then my second question, because we're not part of the district per se, we don't participate in the operations of the fire department, their budgets, their staffing, collective bargaining. We don't really have a voice in that, correct?
We requested a meeting last year that some council members attended to, shall we say, debate their budget. But that was the first time it was on our request. That we didn't request that this year, nor were we asked to. The PUD invites us to their budget meeting.
So we're pretty much a customer. I hate to use a terrible word, a monopoly situation. We're the only. So I'm just wondering. So becoming part of the district may, in some ways, give us more voice in those types of things in the future, possibly. Last question: at what point, as in Linden, does it make sense financially in terms of quality of service to have your own fire department?
Having worked in cities that had both fire and police, you can pretty much plan, with some small variation, to spend as much for fire as you do for police. They're normally very comparable. You many times have...
And we're not close to that.
Well, right...
It's getting closer.
Right now
closer,
we pay...
Yeah.
What's our police budget is?
$1.2 million.
Okay.
And now we're talking an assessment of $1.1 million. So it's really close on an operational standpoint. Naturally, we would need to build a fire department with facilities and equipment and training. There's a lot of probably long-term debt costs because a fire engine costs $150,000 to $200,000 each. And the ladder trucks cost $4,000 or $5,000.
So if we wanted to compare with Linda, I know we're not apples and oranges here. There's a per citizen cost in Linden of some amount, and we have a per citizen cost here. It would be interesting to compare.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that at finance and admin.
Yeah, good
checking out. Yeah.
Councilperson Ingram and then Zimmerman.
Well, I was just going to say that having lived in an area where they made that conversion, they went from a district fire protection system to deciding that they were going to create their own, the cost was shocking to everybody, especially the council, because it was absolutely astronomical. You have to purchase the firehouses from the fire district. They go top dollar for them.
sometimes you can negotiate purchases of equipment from the fire district because they're not going to have to serve that area. They don't need that equipment, but they get top dollar for that. The high lift ladder truck, the hook and ladder, if you will, that we've got here is about $1.7 million. A good pumper is about $800,000. And these are figures from a long time ago. It's an insane amount of money to convert to your own department. My opinion is it's worth hanging on to the fire district for as long as we possibly can. It just makes more monetary sense, because if we were to try and take over the fire protection for the city of Ferndale at our current size, I'm guessing it would probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of about a $75 to $80 million endeavor.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yeah, I think we're all in for a bunch of surprises. But if you remember the big tug-of-war over that small piece of property that out on the Slater Road Annex that we got into, that was just a few thousand dollars, like $6,000 to $10,000. It was a huge tug of war over that issue, how it was going to impact their budgets. And like Paul mentioned, you know, what is the advantage of being in a large group? But this is all something that needs to come out in committee. I'm sorry you got dumped on it, and I said we're already, you know, into the year the way we are. But it's going to be a good community gathering consensus on which we go, and it may come to a public vote, you know, in the fall. But also, you know, We've played around with the idea in the past, and again, without a lot of public discussion, on coming under the sheriff's umbrella for police protection, like we're doing a district for the fire protection. So let's look at all the numbers.
So consensus, finance committee, next committee. Okay, so we better allocate that committee, because
whenever you guys are ready. And if payment's not due till May. Don't rush things.
I want to get on it pretty soon. If you're going to go to an election, you better get going pretty soon.
Sure. Yeah. Whenever you guys are ready.
Okay. Next up on the agenda is the resolution for the city water well project. Our treasurer.
Council members, the well water project is you've authorized, is underway. We are seeking below market financing from USDA Rural Development Federal Agency. We need this resolution as part of the loan application or package. Recommend approval.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I'd like to make a motion that we pass resolution. There's no number on it.
There's no number on it.
No number? Okay. The resolution that's for the city well water project USDA loan.
Time out for a second. So never in the past, we were never supposed to have a number before we voted on the resolution?
Probably no, because you didn't approve it. Where would you do a number?
Okay.
Let's give a number after you. So I will second the approval of agenda bill number 1102002.
This is a new wrinkle that we've been probably doing wrong for a long time. Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Okay, interesting. Wow. That's very interesting.
For the record, we no longer provide ordinance numbers either until approval. Why would you put an ordinance on something if you don't approve it?
It's the same description. Wow. Well, we are looking at a new era.
Well, welcome to the modern. So when we go back in the documents, there's not an ordinance number that hasn't been passed.
Right.
Correct.
So that number just isn't used.
No,
it would be that one.
We've always had the number on our documents, voted by the number of the description.
Chicken and egg.
All along, it should have been. We shouldn't have assigned a number to that. Something that we've been doing incorrectly for a long time.
So the best way to approve a motion or make a motion, we refer to the agenda bill. That's it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what I would offer is that I would be more than happy to provide a recommended motion on each agenda bill so that you guys, whoever decides that they would like to make a motion, can read it directly and do whatever you like. Or make up your own, but it's...
I can see people starting to go one step further and say, I move to move this recommended language.
That works for me. I appreciate that.
Very interesting. Okay, so our big item of the night, remember we flipped it over, the impact fee rebate proposal. This is a council discussion brought forward by Councilperson Goodrich. So we'll start with council discussion. I believe we have several members of the audience that would like to speak on this. So this is a general open discussion, not for action unless you make it so. So I'll start with the maker of the discussion.
That's a good name.
As soon as I get attention.
Save me one. Sorry.
Okay, thanks. Councilperson Goodrich.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Council, for having this tonight. And I'd like to thank any of the folks that are going to get up to speak for coming out tonight as well. This came out, my proposal came out of a discussion that I've heard going on for quite a while, and I thought we needed to deal with it one way or another to decide, should we give any type of incentive to developers in the city to help spur any projects within the city? I met with a couple of builders and came up, asked them for their input. I met with some city staff, asked, got their inputs, and so that's how this proposal came about. I've also brought this forward to the Economic Development Commission this past week and asked their thoughts on it. Their thought was something for discussion tonight, that it should only be for non-residential projects. They didn't think that it should be extended to residential projects. Their thinking being that the city needs non-residential projects. It needs commercial, it needs industrial bases, places that will hire people on a longer-term basis. If they have a commercial building or an industrial, it's going to be something that will be here a while and employ people. Also, if it's a retail development, it would benefit the city for the retail sales tax dollar. They felt that it would be a little bit more of a benefit than just a residential type of thing. So that's something that's, that came out of that group.
Which group is this?
Economic Development Commission.
Just the committee, wasn't the staff. It was just
the EDC folks. So that was something that I thought kind of made a little bit of sense. As far as my proposal was just to get the conversation going. I'm not, bound to it, but I've heard some other proposals and maybe changing some of the percentages type of thing, but I feel that we as a council, it's something that we needed to hear from some other folks besides just us giving our own opinions, and that's why I asked for some support to bring it to the council meeting tonight. And with that, I'll open it up to wherever we're going to go or how this is going to work.
Council, would you like to hear from the audience or discuss amongst yourselves?
Audience.
Audience? Okay. So I have two people on the list and then one city employee that requested to talk. Now, I'll let these people talk and then anyone else can jump forward. So I'll go by the list, and then if you want to talk, we'll just go by hands. So I have David Verrett, David Breathwaite, and I'll have Bo Westford speak. So we'll invite Mr. Verrett up. Welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Good evening, Councilman and Mayor and City staff. My name is David Verrett. I'm actually a Bellingham resident, a building designer for 18 years in the city of Bellingham, and my office is located at 2620 North Harbor Loop Drive. Mouthful, but I've been there for 12 years and it's worked well. First of all, congratulations. City councils across the board need to start looking at reducing impact fees for the single family resident unit and developers. We've seen it put in place in recent years up in Blaine, and it was actually put in place across the board, not just for non-residential units. There's been other jurisdictions around the state that have had successful reduction of impact fees around the Seattle, Bellevue, Newcastle area that I have followed with some good success, and I think it is. It's just the time that we're in. Unit costs, like you'll hear from many of the developers and builders tonight, are just getting higher and higher and higher, and they're just getting out of control when we start to put layer upon layer of impact fee and development fee. In my opinion, this is not a developer's incentive. This is a single unit incentive. 50% reduction on a $17,000 to $24,000 bill, let's say, is not a lot for a developer when they're already starting in the negative arena for developing large flats. So I'd like to just make you all aware of that. Councilman Goodrich, when you were saying that the community development,
economic
development was saying that this should not reach into the single family, I cannot think of any worse of a decision on this topic than not to allow residential units to benefit from even a 50% reduction in impact fees. The city of Ferndale has potential. As I've said, I've been doing work around Whatcom County for many years, and the city of Ferndale is sitting at potentially developing 5 to 1,000 single-family units that, with this type of program, and I think you have to reach even further into the city pockets to give benefits to the developer and to the individual home builder, you can see a significant rise in both number of units and in potential revenue coming back. So it's a big issue. I'm glad you're not going to take a vote on it, hopefully, tonight. I think there's a lot more to discuss. I'd like to make myself available to any of the councilmen over the next 2 weeks or whatever the time frame is going to be until you do decide to take a vote. Councilman Moultrie has my contact, and I will be following this evening up with an official letter that I'll submit to you at a later time.
Question for the speaker, council?
Did you get what you mentioned? Mr. Barrett, you're also with BIA. Did you?
Correct, yes, yeah. Thank you.
No, okay.
Earlier today, I believe you received a letter from the BIA of Whatcom County. I'm also an active member, have been for 12 years, and a board member for 10 years. And I sit on the Government Affairs Committee, of which this topic has been brought to their attention for the past month, not necessarily just with Ferndale, but with other cities around the county. And it's something that the BIA is in full support of. Any reduction for the small to large single-family home developer and builder would be greatly appreciated, and I urge you to give it a lot of consideration. Thank you.
Okay, no other questions? Okay. David Brathwaite. Welcome, sir.
David Brathwaite, 5998 South Baker Park Drive in Ferndale. And I've got a little handout for you guys. I think I'm one short. It's just light reading. Anyway, it's and I'm here to talk about development impact fees, building from impact fees and how they've been set and structured, and how you as a council decided on what what to do and how to increase it.
Closer, David.
I'll just lean closer. I'm right.
No, you shouldn't have leaned that much. There you go.
It'll help hold me up. So I put a little history, and this is my experience basically over the last 5 years. I've lived in Ferndale my whole life. I've been a self-employed contractor for almost 25 years this year. So this is my experience, and it's right in front of you. What I've noticed, now I never developed before in Ferndale, never developed before anywhere, and I went to planning to get an idea of what it was going to cost. And what they told me it was going to cost is not representative of the actual cost. And I understand increases. I understand. I mean, you guys are going to see more stormwater increase. I understand traffic. I get a small portion of all of it. I don't know if, as an aggregate amount of the dollar amount of fees you've intended to raise was ever looked at. Like, when you consider stormwater, you look at stormwater, and you see what's coming, and you budget for that. And when you look at traffic, schools, parks, all you consider all this stuff. And individually, it had to have been what made sense at the time. And I would tell you, I'd like to tell you, as a developer, I would not be here complaining about the fees or even asking you to reconsider them if the market was what it was when you were setting these fees in anticipation of it. But that's not the reality. The market has changed substantially. Multifamily properties down 50, 60, 70%, just property. Single-family properties down substantially as well. So the feasibility of projects in Ferndale is getting smaller and smaller. I mean, if you want somebody to do a project, it's got to make sense financially, right? It's not – if you want somebody to do it, and you may decide you don't want people to do a project in Ferndale. But this is my experience. It's right in front of you. I got a quote Mark from 620 tonight saying – it was a real shock. A 23% increase is a real shock. I would be happy to have only seen a 23% increase in any fee that's been created or increased. I'd be ecstatic. That's no joke. I mean, I would be happy. In hindsight, at the start of it and from a feasibility standpoint, I would have been shocked if you told me stuff was going to go 23, 25. Because I wouldn't have seen the reasoning for it. But when you look at these numbers, really the smallest increase is a 38% in building valuation, and the highest is 313% increase in parks fees. You were shocked at a 28% increase. You're asking builders not to be shocked, but just absorb these increases in fees. It's part of doing business. I understand that, but you can also understand why there was no new lots added last year. The previous year, Ferndale has a lot of lots. You may not need more lots, and I'm not advocating a fee reduction at the development side. I think it does no good when there's already a glut of lots. But I think you could really help anybody that's sitting on a bunch of lots by reducing these building impact fees. I talked with a planner today, and I'm shocked to hear that it wouldn't apply to single family or multifamily. You know, I thought that was the intent. I thought commercial could pick up the difference. And it's all you guys pick and choose what you feel is right. But when you look at those numbers in front of you, and that's my personal experience. I think it translates to anybody else in terms of feasibility. To anybody else trying to develop or trying to build, it's become very difficult. And so you are asking a industry that is down. I mean, it's nobody's disputing that. We are all working for less money. We've lost a substantial portion of our real estate net worth, right? Just like everybody here, I'm not. But you're asking us to continue to pay an increasing fee. I mean, I think you're probably currently discussing increasing traffic impact fees. Right behind that's going to be stormwater again. So forget the numbers I used going back 5 years on the identical building built here in Ferndale. The numbers are right here. There's no dispute. You can interpret percentages any way you want. Just go back to the middle of last year, sometime in the summer, we talked about hardship for developers and developments and extending development permits 2 years and a possible another extension of a year. That's basically a recognition of there's a hardship here and we want to do our part to help it out. Since that time, stormwater has gone up 100%. Water and sewer just went up an additional 10%. And you're talking right now not about traffic impact fee increases. And there's probably more coming. And it doesn't – I know the intention – but the council is to do what it can or what it can afford to do to stimulate this industry and some reasonable growth and development. But it doesn't seem to be translating to the person on the other side of the counter. And that's all I got. Any questions?
This is for David or anything? No. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next up on my list is Bo Westford, and then we'll open up the audience. And both for the people in the audience, you might say who you are and who you work for and what you do.
Good evening. I'm Bo Westford, City of Ferndale Public Works Supervisor. Thanks for having me tonight. First off, my background on this started Friday afternoon, so I might not have all the details, not all the numbers that are out there, but what I will offer is that for the better part of the 11 years I've been here now, I've watched the city struggle to rebuild our infrastructure. It's failing. It's failing miserably. We annex, we add our water into association systems that we can't afford to keep up and maintain. We can't hire the staff necessary to do so. We can't buy the equipment necessary to do it. Council has done a fantastic job of squeezing every ounce out of these budgets for everything that we can get our hands on, and for that I thank you. But to give up money now to anything seems a little bit backwards at this point. Based on the conversation maybe you just had with Greg, okay, we're losing money. You know, we're going to have to pay some more for the fire. We, you know, our citizens, we're not getting any less. Less people aren't moving here. They're still here. They're still driving on our roads. They're still using our water, using our sewer. Everything's getting used. We're not putting less into our sewer system. We're not putting less into our storm system. The federal government mandates that we have storm reports. They mandate that we have storm inventory. Who pays for that? Obviously, our budget, we can't squeeze that out of there. There's just things that we cannot get out of that budget. And I just can't see why at this point. You know, I've got a lot of friends back here that do development. I do. A lot of these guys I consider my friends. I've known them for a long time, family friends. I've been here my whole life. These guys have been here their whole lives. You're going to hear a fine argument from them. And I don't disagree with some of their points. But at this point, I can't see us going backwards. I just can't see that where we can afford it from a public work standpoint and an infrastructure standpoint. So that's about all I have, unless anybody has questions.
Questions for Bo? No. Councilperson Ingram?
Bo, the last couple of years, we've had a very, very, very restricted snow event budget. How much more would that take out of that if we reduced fees? Would we be down to the point where we can't even keep the arterials open?
I can't quote exact numbers, but I think our budget for snow removal this year going into the year was about $5,000. So
plows the roads for 4 days.
That almost buys enough fuel to do it.
That's President Goodrich.
But what we're talking about here has nothing to do with snow removal. The impact fees of water and sewer and parks don't go to pay for the guy to drive a snowplow around the city. And I specifically asked that question, maybe Mark or Greg can answer, where exactly these impact fees go in the budget, and clarify that, because it doesn't go for that, my understanding.
Go to treasurer and then city administrator. And then
let me first address part of that question, Councilmember Goodrich. If you take this handout, it's this long sheet. I don't know if I went all the way around. This is a Parks Mitigation Fund six-year forecast, and that's where Parks Mitigation charges go. They first plop into this fund. And we've decided to do 20-year financing on our two latest parks, Centennial Riverwalk Park and the Second Avenue Griffintown Park. So we have annual debt service of about $98,000 every year for another 19 years or so, and that kind of depends on getting those park mitigation fees in. And if there's any money left over, we can squeeze out a little bit of new capital to spend. So, you know, we wanted to get these parks. We got good interest rates, 1.5% for the Centennial Riverwalk with the county, 3.7% for the Griffintown. But we've got an obligation of $98,000 a year, and we got to pay those. Got to pay those first. And if it doesn't come from park mitigation, which is the intent, we'd have to find the money somewhere else. So it just the thought of reducing the parks fees would put a real strain on meeting that debt service, in my opinion. And then perhaps city administrator, I would kind of discuss the water sewer and where that goes.
Yeah, for the water sewer funds, and I guess to address Councilmember Goodrich's question, I understand from your proposal you're talking about park mitigation fees, which go into the park fund that Mark just talked about, and water sewer connection fees, which go into the water and sewer fund, respectively. For those that have been on the council for a while, you may hearken back to a while ago, many years ago, when we started talking about water rates. And philosophically, there's two components to water sewer. There's the monthly rate revenue, or in this case, we get it every 2 months, the what you get when people use water and it runs through their meter. And then there's the water and sewer connection fees. Ideally, the water sewer connection fees go for capital projects to build more capacity to take care of the impacts that new development brings with it. So that's ideally what water sewer connection fees would go for, to fund our capital projects. The rate revenue should go for operating our plant on a daily basis, paying for the wages and the chemicals and the pumps and all the things that you would expect you would have in a water sewer operation. Back a number of years ago when we started talking about water and sewer revenue, we started talking about that difference between the connection fees and the rate revenues, and we soon realized that, well, that would be an ideal situation where growth is paying for growth, taking care of those impacts, and water rates are taking care of the day-to-day operations. We didn't have a customer base that would allow us to do that without us significantly, by probably factors of 10 or more, increasing our water rates. So the council back then, and to some extent, even though we haven't had this overt conversation, you all have come to a situation where our water sewer connection fees and our rate revenues go into the water sewer fund together. And out of that, we pay for the daily operations as well as the needed capital improvements. Since we've, for the most part, blended those revenues, our water rates are not as high as they could be, or some would argue theoretically should be, to be able to peel off those connection fees and dedicate them slowly to capital. If you did have a situation like that, you could then modulate. If we're going quickly, we can do more capital projects. If the city's going more slowly and those capital connection fees are smaller, you do less projects. And that would be an ideal world. What we've been needed to do annually is we have needed to look at what is a realistic water sewer rate for our customers and what are realistic water sewer connection fees, and then realistically, what sort of capital projects can we do every year. It's meant that we have done some fairly substantial capital projects, mostly in line with our street projects. This is kind of an opportunity where you dig up a street, you want to replace the water sewer lines, it makes a lot of sense. Those projects, while being very important, were perhaps not the most essential when you look at our water sewer plant. If we were to spend the money for what might be considered the absolute more essential projects, we would have done more projects like the Third Avenue sewer, where we dug up Third Avenue for the sole purpose of replacing the sewer line. It wasn't in relationship to a street project. It was simply a necessary capital project. So if we reduce, because of this blended nature, if we all of a sudden have a serious downturn in water sewer connection fees, either through continuing economic downturn or by fiat from the council by reducing the impact fees, what we would need to do would be to go back and say, okay, we need to fund our operations every day, so what's left over? What's the tail of the dog? And that is the capital project. So we would probably need to cut further back on our capital projects. Next month here, we're going to be talking about our new sewer comp plan. And you're going to be seeing that sewer comprehensive plan has some substantial sewer projects in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. Part of it is that deferred maintenance that Bo kind of alluded to. Part of it is based on the city continuing to grow. But I guess the real picture I want to paint for you is that our current blended water sewer connection fees and rate revenue has had the effect of holding down the monthly rates for water and sewer in the city, And should we want to either rebate the connection fees and continue to do our capital projects, or for that matter have money available to take care of capital projects that we can't wait on, then the outcome might be more pressure from you to raise water sewer rates for our existing customers. So all of this, you know, if you squeeze, it's like the water balloon. If you squeeze one in, it pops out somewhere else. If you squeeze connection revenue, by golly, you're either going to have to reduce the expenditures or find more revenues, and that'll probably be rate revenues. So they're all interrelated, but the point that started this off is that these are water sewer connection fees and park impact fees. So what we're talking about is the overall financial health of our water sewer utility and our park mitigation fund.
Councilperson Ingram?
Yeah, and I probably need to apologize to Brent because I didn't make my statement clear. Mark alluded to the fact that we've got debt service on parks that we have to pay. We can't not pay the bill. So if we reduce park mitigation fees and we can't make the debt service, then the money to make that debt service has to come from someplace else, and the only other place it's going to come from is the general fund. And that's when it impacts things like snow removal. That's when it impacts things like, can we keep the current level of public works employees that we have now, let alone hire a new one? Can we keep all of them that we have? That's where it gets down to the hard tack, because we've got obligations with this money. It has to be paid. So, I don't know. That's the way I see it.
So we don't make Bo stand up here. Any more questions for Bo? Or, okay. Not that you weren't looking good up there.
Nice
haircut. Thanks, Bo.
Nice hair.
Yeah. Councilperson Goodrich?
Well, based off of this discussion here tonight, if we had no building happen the rest of this year, we'd be in a world of hurt. We're gambling on how many building permits or whatever are we gambling on getting in the city to be able to make these debt services that we're already tying to. It looks like we're in a gambling game already.
Estimation from our community development director?
Well, it's difficult to project out, of course, but the first month of this year has been, we issued 9 single-family residents in January 2011, which was more than the last 4 years of January issuing combined. So there's no indication, and also you look at the consistency that we've had through this great recession. We didn't drop the number of units, unlike Bellingham, unlike I think every other city. The scale of development for residential has maintained or increased. So, you know, I don't know how many people are sitting on the sidelines, and I'm sure that there are some, but up to this point, we haven't seen it in Ferndale. And so when you project out, gosh, you know, you can project that maybe everyone that's going to build has submitted their plans, but there aren't those indications of that yet.
So in answer to his question, I mean, with what you budgeted for new construction, and obviously now you're above budget in January, I mean, so did you have an actual per-unit budget for January?
You looking at me?
Yes.
I am looking at you. For what?
For new residential.
We just flatline it, divided by 12, annual divided by 12.
So you're above budget right now.
It sounds like it, with nine new single families.
Okay.
Yeah.
Councilperson Feria? No?
No, I was going to.
Okay, I'm sure there's. Councilperson Metzler?
Yeah, I just wrote down some things. I kind of in two ledgers. One is the struggling building industry. I think no one's going to debate it's a tough industry right now. And I was just jotting down some of the struggles they have include just the cost of materials have gone up because a lot of materials are petroleum based, and our country does not have an energy policy that works very well, and those costs are quite high. I've noticed when I've built a couple of homes that the various energy and engineering codes keep getting more strict, and there's costs that go with those types of things. Employee costs, the cost of just hiring employees has gone up and up and up. The GMA doesn't make it cheaper. There are a lot of things that make it more difficult for these guys to build these homes. Right now we've got, I don't know how many hundreds of lots that we're only collecting maybe $150 a year on the property taxes on those lots, as opposed to it would be $600 or $700 on these things. It's just tough on these guys. But on the other hand, I think the city has a concern, too. And one of the arguments against doing this, which I think is something to consider, is that if we reduce fees by 50%, we have to double the number of permits just to break even. And that doesn't even account for the extra, perhaps, labor to the city. Is that correct, Mayor? You said something about if we cut fees in half, then you have to double the number of permits just to have a...
Well, the math is pretty simple. Yeah. I mean, if you're cutting something by 50%, if you want to get to where you originally thought. You're going to have to double what you
anticipated. Exactly. I want to come back to that. Also, I went back to my old records. I had to go through the attic for this, but all my permitting and connection fees in 94, that was decades ago, was $4,700 for the first home. But in 2004, all of the fees, all the connection fees was $11,000. And I dug a little bit further. The park fees that year in 2004 were $332. So they needed to go up. I'm not going to argue that, but they have gone up quite a bit. We needed to do that. The water fee went from $2,200 in 2004 to $5,300 currently. The sewer connection went from $3,200 to $6,600. We probably needed to do that. My thinking on this, because I don't think there's the political and maybe the practical interest to go 50%, but if we went 25%, if we went 25% reduction in the three fees, the water, the sewer, and the parks, we would only need to have a 33% increase in the number of homes just to have a net neutral on that. I'd like us to consider something like that. I think we need to do something. I think we need to send a message to the building folks that we want to work with them. I'd like to hear other ideas. I appreciate some of the things we're doing in the Planning Commission. I want Ferndale to continue to build the reputation as having the fastest turnaround time on permits. All that kind of stuff is important and good. But if we were to do a 25% rebate in the spirit of Councilmember Goodrich's idea, we just need to see a 33% increase in building going on to recoup that loss. And that would be about $5,000 a home, if I penciled out correctly, $4,000 or $5,000 a home. That can make a difference between whether a home is built and not built, I think. We can ask a builder whether that's true or not, but those are my two cents on this issue today.
That's Person Malpezzi.
I guess speak a little bit towards the gambling Mr. Goodrich spoke towards, and also just to recognize that this is I love the start of this discussion and look forward to continuing the discussion. I don't think we're going to solve anything here tonight. But if we just look at the one fund that our treasurer passed out to us, we're looking at this year of a projected 12% increase in revenues of the impact fees. And then in 2012, a 70% increase. So until we can find replacements for these numbers, I don't see how we can afford it. Because if we don't, if we take a little more realistic increase between 11 and 12, let's say just 10%, which I even think is a struggle in this economic time, we'd be $12,000 in the hole on this fund, as opposed to the projected $30,000 increase. So until we can replace these numbers with something else, I think this is a big gamble.
Councilperson Ferry and then Henson.
Two different things. One is to address what Ms. Mitchell was saying. So when you talk about cutting the fees by 50% and then you would need to get twice as many things built, I don't think that's entirely accurate, because you would be you would decrease the fees by 50% and then have to build twice the amount, right? But you would be getting then like 200% of the impact. So it's like you're building this one thing, with, say it's a single family home, and people driving on the road and all the things, the parks and everything else that we're talking about it, and the sewer and everything it's impacting, and then you'd have to build two houses to get that same amount of money in for the impact. But you're now doubling the amount of impact on your sewer and your water and your parks. So it's not really equaling it out by building twice the amount to get the same amount of impacts, because you're having now four times of the impacts for half the amount of money. Anyway, just wanted to point that, if that makes any sense whatsoever. I wanted to see if maybe a little, if there was any other, like you said, along the lines, if there's any other kind of incentive that would help the builders that doesn't affect these funds that we just can't seem to have any wiggle room in that I could see. Definitely not 50% worth of impact fees. So along the lines of increasing our speed for our permits, or if there's anything else that would help, that would be helpful to the builders and helpful in their process, you know, I would be absolutely open to other ideas as well.
Councilperson Hansen, and then we're going to go to our administrator.
There's some audience speakers up there.
Yep.
Connie spoke, and I'll just elaborate a little bit on what Connie was saying. Well, no, you said it very well. If you build a single-family home and you pay a $5,000 sewer impact fee, that's so that you can hook up to the multi-million dollar system. It's all the pipes to get it to the sewer plant, includes the sewer plant and the processing of that, all the way to get that water back in the river. That's a cost that the city has. If you build two houses, you have doubled the cost. You've used that much of the system, and you've used twice as much to do two houses as you did with one. Remember, an impact fee. It's not, if there's no impact, then we shouldn't charge any fee at all. So we have an impact every time we put someone new on the sewer system, someone new on the water system. And Connie's exactly right. A 200% increase in fees does not, in fact, lessen, doesn't make us equal. We've doubled the impact. The other thing I was just going to say is that we're now in a council discussion, and I would prefer if we could go ahead and hear the rest of our patrons here that would like to speak.
Well, I've already made a terrible gesture to Councilperson Ingram that he couldn't even have one more statement. So I've pointed at our administrator, but he should be brief, because then we'll go to the audience.
I'll be brief. Two related points. The question was asked, are there any other things we can come up with to encourage development? We've done that. If you remember, we have a 50% reduction in water sewer connection fees if people locate near the water sewer treatment plant. So we had a program in place that was going to theoretically encourage development in at least the downtown area or near downtown. We didn't get any takers until we expanded the zone. And I believe Mr. Braithwaite took part of that because we expanded it to include his property. That brings me to my other point. How developers make money is not so much as to how much it costs to build their home. It's what they can sell it for. This is a market-driven industry. If you can't sell the home, it doesn't matter what you cost you. And if you can sell it at a very high price, it doesn't matter as much how much it costs you to build it. So for us to encourage development in the city, it has to be market-driven. A $7,000 deduction on a $14,000 or $15,000 worth of impact fees, if the market isn't there to buy the house, probably is not going to take a developer and say, I'll do this, when in fact he wouldn't have done it. It's going to have to be market-driven. And we can't drive the market. We tried downtown, and we've had zero takers. We had to expand the zone out to where the market is, and the market appears to be perhaps stronger for single-family homes than it is for homes in the downtown area that might be condominiums or apartments. So it's always hard when you the unintended consequences. We put together the program of 50% reduction, no takers, not because it wasn't a good program, but because there wasn't the market there.
That wasn't completely great. So what we should do is we'll open up the conversation to contractors in the audience. So as the only contractor on this side of the fence, you are correct. It's tough out there. I'm a contractor. My income level is lower than it's ever been. My company's smaller than it's ever been in the last 15 years. I have plumbers that basically draw unemployment certain weeks because, again, get full hours. It's a bad, bad situation, and there's people hanging on by their fingernails, and I think I spoke before, is that more of my fellow people in the plumbing industry have went bankrupt in the last few years than ever any time. And they're still operating out of their cars and working for hardly anything. So hope none of you contractors are hiring those unlicensed, unregistered contractors. Not that any one of you would do that. But it's a tough deal. But that's my side as a contractor. Things are terrible. It's tough. But the other side of that as a mayor is, boy, the impacts are there. The one thing I am proud of is that we had this goal to be faster, better, more efficient, and some contractors help us. We're not there yet, but, boy, we're doing a better job than a whole lot of other places, and we'll continue to do that regardless of what you do. The planning department is getting leaner and working better. But now to hear for some other contractors. So who had the hands up first? I think he beat you. But he was making eyes at me. Welcome, sir.
I'm David Turner. I live at 5895 Foxtail Court here at Ferndale. And there was a couple of things. One of my pet peeves is that you talk about hookup fees and, for the water and sewer anyhow. To me, when I pay a hookup fee, I'm paying to hook up to that water and sewer. And I'm not paying for the water and sewer to get to the treatment plant. That's what the money from the customers is supposed to come from. And we're meshing it all into one, and so that we can make it so that all the people out there don't have to pay quite as much. So who gets the brunt of it is the contractor. He's the guy that's taken from his hookup fees to subsidize the people so their water and sewer bill isn't so high. And I just don't see how that works. I see that it's just like robbing Social Security to pay other bills on the federal level. You know, it's just, if it's for this same thing as the building permit, you're paying for a building permit, it ought to go to the building department. And things should be separated like that, and then maybe each department would have to run a little bit more efficiently. There was one other thing there that I was hearing earlier. I don't remember right now. Darn it, it was a good point, too.
It'll come back once you sit down.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Turner. And I'm glad you brought about this discussion because Greg kind of touched on it. So in theory, if our impact fees, excuse me, if our hookup fees were limited to the hard cost, which is a little subjective anyway, to what it costs the city to hook up that new home, our water and sewer rates would have to go up for the monthly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I understand that. I'm just checking.
We're subsidizing the water and sewer.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I was going to say, I remembered what it is. Greg was talking about everything being market driven, and I believe that 100%. But the truth is, in a market like this, you have to get to where the market is if you're a builder. I mean, if you want to sell your product, you have to get it down there to where somebody's going to buy it. And in order to do that, we have to have, or it would be very helpful if we had reduced fees. And I feel the only way you're going to turn it around is to get the prices down low enough to where people are going to start buying this stuff. You know, I mean, basically that's what you got to do is all but give it away today, so anything that we could get to help so that we could get down there where the people saying, wow, maybe I want to buy something, we could start generating some movement in the economy and have things going up. I still say housing drives everything. You know, I think it's the biggest thing there is in the economy in the country right now, and it's why we're in the toilet. I knew it was going to happen when they started jacking the interest rates. You know, yeah, fool around. This is what's going to happen, and it did.
How long have you been building, Mr. Turner?
22 years.
Would you say there's been a reasonable increase or a significant increase in the burden on your cost? And I tried to mention in my own clumsy way the various costs that government places upon you through your hiring of employees to codes and such and so forth.
Yeah, all that stuff goes up. It's just like when you bought a new car in 1968. You know, it didn't have power windows on it. It didn't have this, that, and the other thing, you know, and you got it for $3,400, you know.
And now you buy the car, it's got GPS, it's got all the stuff, and yeah, it costs you a ton more. Well, it's the same thing in the housing thing, you know. Yeah, everything. You know, we're right now changing the code to where you got to go from a 3/4 inch hold down bolt to a 7/8 inch hold down bolt that penetrates 28 inches into the foundation, and the foundation is only 24 inches deep, so therefore you got to get it into the footing. It's just like, it's ridiculous stuff. But yeah, that's what's happening, and you know, you just have to put up with it, I guess. I don't know what else you do, but if you got to make a stand someplace and voice your opinion, so I guess that's what I'm doing. So.
Great. Thank
All right.
I got a quick question. Do you think there's going to be a 70% increase in the housing industry between this year and next year?
A 70%
increase?
Increase?
Building?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Why?
Any other developers want to answer that when they come up too? Well, because we're budgeting on a 70% increase. But I really don't want to go into a larger discussion.
Okay,
making
thanks.
Making a point.
I think I saw Mr. York and then anyone else come. Sorry, Pat. His hand was really fast.
Yeah, according to our budget.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Ron York. I live at 1292 West Axon Road in Ferndale. This is a difficult subject. I've heard from staff and city council people, from even the road department gentlemen. I'm sorry. Sewer and water, I guess. And there are some strong views and just diametrically opposed views. And I think it's because things have gotten very difficult. They've gotten difficult. And when that happens, it puts pressure. And you all have to divine that and decide what's the right thing to do. And I don't envy you. It's a difficult decision to make, I believe. One thing that I'm here to say that I'm in favor of Councilman Goodrich's proposal to reduce the impact fees, but I'm thinking that I'm strongly suggesting that you make that residential as well. I worked for a number of years for the Rite Aid Corporation doing land acquisition all over the state of Washington. And one of the things that they, my marching orders to decide what communities to go into, we absolutely had to have two things. The property that I was looking at had to be on First and Main. It had to be the finest piece of property downtown. And the second thing is it had to be in a community that was in a growth pattern. Population is everything. If you only look at going and make this reduction for businesses that will create income to the city, I think that's short-sighted. Also, just to comment on Yuri's note that that you've received 9 applications, or you've actually permitted 9 in January, I'm suggesting that part of that might be due to the impending energy code that's coming up. So builders see this kind of stuff coming as quickly as they can. They respond to it. They go, oh, my gosh, I've got to take out a building permit, otherwise my costs are going to go up. Same kind of thing happened with the city of Ferndale recently when the impact fees were going up by 10%. Didn't you see a bunch of applications come in and people paid their fees? Can you imagine what would happen if you have, we're talking about a 10%, just a builder saying, I want to save 10%, and they'd storm City Hall and put in dozens of applications. Can you imagine what would happen if we have a 50% reduction in these 3 impact fees that we're talking about? It will be significant. I have other options. I don't have to build in Ferndale. I'm a builder. I build in several different cities in Whatcom County. We could go to Blaine. We could go to Bellingham. We like Ferndale. I love Ferndale. I live here. I wish I was in the city limits for a number of reasons. And so annex me in. I'm just out. Go out to Northwest Avenue on the accident. But I'm in favor of Councilman Goodrich's proposal for a couple of reasons. One, to stimulate the economy here in Ferndale and even in Whatcom County. And the other is to help meet the objectives of the city's comprehensive plan under the heading of affordable housing. We're in a severe economic downturn, the likes of which probably none of us, maybe some of us have seen this kind of severity, but I certainly haven't. I've been around for 55 years, and I've seen some dips in the market, but nothing like this. Business as usual is not a good option. I think we need to mix it up and do something. I heard comments about you're gambling on, and you are. You're saying how many permits are going to come in if we don't do anything, and how many permits will come in if we do something. I would suggest that it would be on a couple of points, probably three in particular, good for the city to strongly consider going ahead with this fee reduction proposal. Number one, you've just raised the impact fees by 10%. Councilman Mutchler just suggested that maybe we meet somewhere in the middle at 25%. Well, that's almost gone away by just the virtue of the fact that we had a 10% increase, so we're really talking about a 15% savings anyway. It's worth something. But it really is a math problem for me. When we look at communities that we're going to build housing, and I do primarily a little bit upscale townhome buildings, fourplexes, triplexes, duplexes, that type of thing, we look at we do our due diligence. We don't just take a flying guess at it and hope that we hit the market. We know what rents we can get in a community beforehand, and we try our best to ascertain what the costs are going to be. We put that onto a spreadsheet, and when we know what our costs are, we know what our rents are going to be, we have a little green box that comes out in our spreadsheet. If it's green, we go. If it's red, we stop. We don't go ahead. We've got to look for another community. Or we just hold off and we wait. We don't take risks. It's not a good idea. And there are many builders and developers who haven't done the due diligence, and they're not in the game anymore, unfortunately. For the project that I have under construction in Ferndale, we have 11 townhome units going at the Vista Meadows Long Flat. The only line item cost of development that has continued to increase in the face of the recession is the impact and building permit fees that are assessed by the city of Ferndale. Really, everything else, even though we think that costs are going up, they aren't. Costs are going down. We're getting better plumbing bids. We're getting better framing bids. Our framers are framing at probably 75 to 80% prices that they charged us 5 years ago. Everything from foundation to roofing, they are dropping, and they have to. Otherwise, you can't achieve feasibility. Now, the only thing that so we've got this curve on a scale where prices are coming down to develop, and at the same time, you've got this curve going up where fees are increasing. That's a problem. And when the city of Ferndale, when they have a comprehensive plan that says we need to pay attention to affordable housing, I would ask you to just be a player in that. Make a hard decision and help with the affordable housing element. It doesn't seem like a lot. On our project, we paid $110,000, a little over $110,000 in fees, impact fees, building permits. That's just to get permission. Those were broken down, $103,000 to the city of Ferndale, and $7,150 to the Ferndale School District. Those are impact fees and building. That just gives you permission.
How many units?
11. I'm not sure who said that. Okay, 11 units. We're not looking for a handout. We're simply looking to achieve feasibility. In the summer of 2011, we will assess the feasibility of a second project consisting of three fourplexes. Critical to the decision of whether to move forward with phase two will be interest rates, impact fees, and labor and material costs. We believe that the demand for our product is significant, and we're less concerned about the rents that we can charge, or the occupancy fill rate. We think there is a customer out there that would be happy to move into our units once we get them developed. The thing that scares us is how much is it going to cost us to get the product to the marketplace. A temporary rollback in fees would not be unusual. Someone has said at the microphone tonight that Blaine has done it, Sumas has done it. It's happening in Seattle, King County, in Bellevue. We're reading about those things. We see them on the internet. We see reports of that. Our project totals $1.35 million. $780,000 of our checks that we write to develop our 11 units goes to material suppliers or workers who live in the city of Ferndale. I think that's significant.
Why is that significant? I know, but I want to hear it.
Well, I think it's significant because when you look at who gets the rest and the other 40%, it's about a 60-40 ratio. That has to be split up between Linden, Bellingham, Everson, and portions of unincorporated Whatcom County. It gets people working right here in the city of Ferndale, and I think that's important. And I'll wind up with this. We're just asking that the city of Ferndale would participate in the affordable housing element. We're doing really everything we can to keep our costs down. We're working hard. We're working as smart as we can. And we're keeping our costs down from materials to labor. And when we see this graph where this is going this way with the city and our costs are going down and we're working cheaper, and your bottom line probably is looking a little bit like mine these days, it's difficult. So this isn't a subsidy for developers. We just don't guess at this stuff. We don't guess at the relationship between cost to build and rents to be charged. At least people who are still in business don't anyway. We have no secrets about what we're proposing to rent our units for. That we're going to bring them on the market at $925 per month. It's 1,000 square foot, two bedroom, two bath, with a garage in a nice location in the city of Ferndale. If we thinking about phase two, if we're able to move ahead with that, if we can achieve feasibility, we will probably hold our rents at $925. If we can't, the money's got to come from somewhere. You don't just take it from the developer. The developer just doesn't work that way. It gets passed on to somebody else. Somebody pays it. And I'm suggesting to you that it's the citizens. Obviously, it's the citizens of Ferndale because they're going to live here. And those are the people you need to look out for.
Questions, Councilor Zimmerman, I think, is first.
Yeah, Mr. York, let's say that $10,000 impact fee, if that were to just go away, what would affect that $900 a month rental?
Probably $25.
Okay. So it's kind of an amortization in, you know, the price and terms.
Absolutely.
Type of thing. If you can stretch it out over a longer period of time of the impact fees, the everyone's ahead.
Right.
And the city doesn't lose out over the long haul. Right. Because, I mean, we're sitting here going, yeah, we want more customers. We want to sell more water. We want to sell more sewer. But it's that, it's the, just like going into a dance. It's the cover charge of getting into the dance that's hurting everybody.
Right. I'll have Councilperson Ferry and then Mutchler.
I heard you talk about how you generally, I don't know what the average rent is for a one, but, you know, for the units that you're talking about. So when you say $925 is, I haven't rented in such a long time, I have no idea if that's, you know, where that falls. But you say in one breath that you build higher-end higher-end townhomes and duplexes. And then you keep talking about how important this is for affordable housing. I don't think of higher-end units as necessarily being compatible with affordable housing. So perhaps you're speaking of that in, as a whole with all builders. I mean, if we go and do 50% impact fee reductions or whatever, you know, if we decide to do anything like this, is that even enough to make something suddenly fall into the affordable housing realm? I mean, it sounds great. Like, we should be doing more for affordable housing. Sure. Yeah, everybody would say that that's a positive thing. But by reducing impact fees by 25 or 50%, is that even enough to make something become, you know, affordable housing? Suddenly bring it down into that bracket?
Yeah, I think if I said that we're upper end, we're slightly upscale, that's probably a better description of what we do. It's really not upper end. There's some pretty nice stuff out there. But for the marketplace, we come in just a little bit higher than the average. It's got to start somewhere, I think. If you make that decision, it affects all of the units all across the board. So I think it does have an impact on what you do.
Okay. Councilperson Mutchler, then Hanson.
Yeah, I was interested in your Rite Aid experience, and I think I heard you say that giant companies like that, and I know this city is interested in some larger retail showing up someday here, wants to see a community where there's a pro-growth attitude, and namely in housing. They want more customers to be here. Correct. And I think what I've heard here sometimes, and I think it's both, is we think we'll get more residents if we have these types of services and retailers providing for us. And you're saying it's both. The retailers need the customer base to be here. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then something that I hear that sounds like something we call a zero-sum game, I think you're suggesting that by doing something like this, it is going to hopefully, and it's a gamble, have a dynamic impact on other developers looking up and down I-5, deciding where they'd like to get their guys working, they'd like to do something. Here's a place that's making it a little bit easier for us to do something rather than another city.
That's correct.
My question is it enough to make a difference? Is it going to, you're here, you know this community, is it going to make a difference with other developers to come in and do something?
I think so. You know, you've got a huge lot inventory. You have an opportunity to stimulate a lot of those right out of the marketplace. And improving those, and don't forget that they create tax base, and it does other things to affect the economy. Mm-hmm. Plus, it gives jobs. It's a win-win all the way around from my perspective. And the other thing that I liked about Councilman Goodrich's proposal is this isn't forever. It's for a specified period of time. I believe it was something like by the end of 2012. Give it a shot. I think it's worthy.
Councilperson Hanson?
I was just correct something that was said earlier. We were talking about the $900, $925 apartment that could be reduced to $925. But the problem is, in order for us to make up the difference, we probably are going to have to raise our rates. And I can guarantee you that some subsequent owner is, depending on how you pass that through, it's going to get passed through. So the effect on the person that's going to rent that apartment is going to be essentially the same. It may go down to $900 rent, but if their water and sewer bill goes up $25 a month, they haven't gained anything.
In our case, we build and hold, So we build for ourselves. We don't sell the building. So we're the one that pays the water bill. I'm not afraid of that. We typically, with a multifamily scenario like that, what comes with that rent is we pay for water and sewer always, and sometimes garbage. That's negotiable.
And storm, I would assume.
Yeah, well,
okay. Yes. Mr. Young?
Yeah, I got the impression, your situation might be different. I'm getting the impression that if we lowered your impact fees, it would have the effect of lowering either your rents or, if you were selling the homes, lowering the sale price. That I think is laudable, but I thought that the purpose of the rebate program was to not so much lower your cost of your unit to who you either rent or sell to, but to encourage the developers out there who don't want to develop to develop. So I thought it was a more of a yes-no rebate program rather than I'll lower my price to the end user.
You kind of went that, okay. your second phase, you went into that.
Right.
I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah. So if you do that, the likelihood of me building 12 more units in your community is strong, and it gets fairly weak if we aren't looking at that scenario. The reason why is because in different communities they have different rates. We have to plug those into the formula. You're a spreadsheet guy. You know math pretty well, but there and other communities have different rate structures. Bellingham, you're pretty much on a par with Bellingham as far as your water and sewer impact fees. That it's there's not a lot of difference. But we can charge more rent if we build in Bellingham. And I have units in Bellingham. I know what I'm talking about. I have them in Blaine, Ferndale, and Bellingham.
So your costs need to be lower here in order to make it worth, because you can't charge
absolutely
more rent. The rent is going to be lower here.
Yeah. Rents are probably about 5%. Lower in Ferndale, and then another 5% lower up in Blaine.
Okay. So, Pat, I promised to give you a shot.
Mayor?
I know you're relaxing way too much.
Mayor, yes? Can I make a comment real quick?
Sure.
I just want to clarify something. My proposal is for across the board, including residential. I was just sharing the Economic Development Commission's thought of just doing it for non-residential, but me personally, I think residential should be included. I just wanted to clarify that.
Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Patrick Allison, 4825 Alderson Road, Birch Bay. Hey, we pay a lot at Birch Bay. And I won't have to pay any of your impact fees here because I don't have property here.
I'll be annexed.
But I think this is a really good thing to bring up, Brent, and I think it's a good discussion. Regardless of how you work it out, you're learning stuff. That's important. Now, you know, I went to a city a month and a half ago on the East Coast, and we're talking about water. I took water out of this tap, and I drank it. It was private water. The cities there were under pressure from people to keep costs low, and they wound up selling the water supply to somebody else. Now, they kept the pipes, so they had to maintain the pipes and everything else, but the water was private. I think you can only ask so much from government. You know, we always have impacts on anything. Anything, you're going to have impacts. They have more houses come in. There's maybe a little less quality of life unless you do something with parks. Bellingham seems to like impact fees, and they like taxes for parks. And guess what? In Bellingham, you can demand more rent. It's a pleasant place. You can ride your bike. You can go to parks and go to Kmart. Did you get my email? Kmart, incidentally, it sounds exciting to everybody. But the Municipal Research League had a publication, and it was somebody else saying, Kmarts don't pay that much in property tax. They employ people. And if you guys don't get the Municipal Research League's emails, you could get them into it. I think you'd find it really well. I did want to start off earlier talking about greed for growth. And I think any municipality can get that where you feel like you have to grow to keep the whole tax structure going. And I think that can be dangerous. Anyways, good luck. You're doing a good job. You're learning lots of things. So am I.
Thanks, Pat. Any other developers? A hand up there. Welcome, sir.
My name is Chad Schmidt. Address is 2629 Elizabeth Street. Soon to be here, Ferndale, if I can afford to. Anyway, sorry. I am a builder in the community. I do reside in Bellingham, but I do a majority of my work in Ferndale. And I do work around builders that have taken advantage of the Blaine situation. We had stimulated, and we had actually did five houses up there that we would not have done up there, which has stimulated the growth. Has helped out. I think there's a few factors that we're kind of forgetting about. We're talking about have to double the amount of houses to do to equal that. We're forgetting about the factors of the increased excise tax. Once a house is sold, there's an excise tax. You guys get a portion of the excise tax. Now you're now creating an income a property tax base out of that. That person now becomes a shopper in at Hagen's. They pay a property tax. They pay an income tax. They pay sales tax. There's a compounding effect that would offset having to do a 50% increase to control. I understand infrastructure needs to be taken care of, maintained, but again, we've addressed that whole the comment about impact fees are for the impact. But upon a development, if I'm not stand corrected, please me, but doesn't a developer already pay a huge amount of money to build the infrastructure in their subdivision to tie into the main sewer line? So all in that aspect. So I thought they have to pay for all the sewer lines, all the connection, the water lines and stuff that are in the street. If that is not true, do they not pay to pave the roads in that subdivision to be done? But then you guys have to maintain them. So wait a second. Why do we need such huge impact fees to do this if they're already paying, the developer is already paying a portion of these impacts already upon their own pocket to develop, to entice people to live? We do need to maintain them. Maybe we need to increase fees a little bit in that. But part of the other thing is we're talking about this impact reduction. I think we're losing a little sight is that there was a large number of people rushing in the month of December due to the 10% increase to input a lot of permits they probably would not have done in the month of December, might have waited to January, maybe February when they could have a little more time to do some planning, a little more design to see if exactly what home they want. Are we going to then, if this is passed, hypothetically, are we going to consider those people in the month of December that rushed to cover this to help offset it? Because it would then into a unfair market advantage to a person that applies for it in January compared or February compared to December. I would like the council to consider that aspect of maybe addressing that aspect. There are some people that did put out a large number of money to help out on that aspect. But the thing is, this is a very important issue because there are a lot of city municipalities in the state that are affecting this. I'm one of the contractors that's actually working more of a number of 40% below market value what I was doing before. My L&I went up 28%. My payroll had to come down a little bit, but I'm still paying guys a decent wage to live. My payroll hasn't gone down, but I've had to come down with my bids. I've had to come down with these things. Entail, my clients I work for had to come down to a price. We need to, all we're asking is maybe all of us to get in the same boat and help us row. It's a short period of time, 1 year, year and a half. The whole impact of this would be a stimulation in growth in your personnel. But now, again, you're talking about development. A store does not want to come will not locate to a place unless they have a set clientele, a certain customer base that's going to be there. If you can't even meet that, a store is not going to want to move to that area to work to create a business if they don't have a client base. You want other businesses to come. If there is already enough businesses supplying that client base, they're not going to restructure and move to a new place. So it's a fine line that has to be balanced out. I don't know if I made much sense. But there's a few factors that you guys got to really play in effect. And I'm very for, much for that reduction due to the people I work with and work around with would take more advantage of that. Because that $5,000 to $7,000 is sometimes the swinging price in selling of a house. A lot of times a house sells for, let's just say, $220. The buyer comes in 6% below, the 8% below, plus asking for a closing cost. So we're already now knocking down a good chunk. And sometimes that's a make it, break it for a person of building these spec homes, because there's not a profit margin of 4-to-1 like we used to or 3. It's more of about a 10 to 15%.
Councilor Zimmerman?
It's Mr. Smith. Chad Smith, is that right? Schmidt?
Yes.
Good German name. The concept, if you get a break and you can build multiple houses, and Ron York, right, there's more of an economy of scale right there, because you're buying a lumber package for, you know, four homes or five homes versus just one. So I see where there's a real economy of scale of what we're trying. Now, to clarify another thing that you were saying earlier, Mr. Councilman Goodrich, would this be retroactive to January 1st? Is that what we're kind of proposing for the full calendar year? Because what are these people that made the rush to jump over? I wasn't quite clear on where you're going.
Most of the clientele have made a rush for the month of December due to, it is partly to the energy cost, but there was also, when you have a 10% increase,
mm-hmm.
that made them think, okay, we got to get some houses in, get these in. Because and the fact is, clientele also did pull their permits. They weren't one of the people that got in, did their permit application, and they said, okay, now I'm going to sit for a year now that I saved that money. We still are progressing in our projects, keep moving forward. We're not doing things just to move it. We're doing it for business. We want to keep moving. We would like to keep moving even more forward and do more homes here in Ferndale. Love to. I mean, I really appreciate the permit department.
Sure.
The inspectors are awesome. The turnaround within the city was great. The help that we get from all the utility people, we love what you guys do here with us.
Okay.
And we really appreciate you guys' services.
Yeah, I guess we'll clarify whether or not to go back to January 1st or whenever we pass this. So
it would have to be. It would be a discussion thing. I originally put January 1, but then with talking with Yori when we were working out some of the date issues, we decided to leave
the
start.
You ever seen the movie Breaking Away where the bicycle car salesman?
Refund?
Yeah.
Refund?
Yeah. I got that money. You're going to make me give refund back to them?
We don't like refunds.
Well, I saw this rebate program at the very end, so that could be rebate. So
my question is, and I guess it's I'd like to throw out just to think about it. Brett has proposed all the way through 11 and then all the way to the end of 12. Would it do, and Mr. York, the same thing is, if we wanted to prove it to the council, or just as a consideration, would going all the way to the end of 11 still show some? Because now you're stretching out, you're gambling for 2 years, or do we?
Gosh,
we gamble
break
for a year
or
11 months now? I guess that's a question.
Well, that is that's a good question, because there was an earlier statement that Ferndale has a good grasp of amount of buildable lots right now. I don't know. I think last time I checked at one time, it was like 400, maybe 300 lots built, more than that. Now, a lot of developers are not going to encourage to start building new developments, you know, to come in for, you know, it takes a couple of years. But still, if there is, over the last 3 years, still 400 to 600 lots buildable in the city of Ferndale, what's really going to entice them to do that? We got to get rid of the inventory. What's going to be best to get rid of the inventory, spur builders that have survived, that have been very extraordinary builders now, that have been very cost conscious? That extra $5,000 or so money would be very much a big boost to make it to where we can afford, and maybe even keep our houses at the same price, but maybe even do a little bit nicer house for our clientele, to give them what the buyers want without saying, okay, we're giving you a nice cabinet, but we're giving you a plastic countertop because we can't afford it. You know, we want to do something nice.
Mr. Goodrich?
Just a reminder for the council and other folks that the way this is proposed now, that the construction has to be completed by December 2012.
Yeah.
So it's really not a two-year program, because you have to work back from, you know, getting their final occupancy, how far back would they have to start construction
in 2012 so that they would be completed by the end of that.
How long does it usually take?
Okay, but then the question is for final occupancy. So that means you've got a client living there. So you're asking a developer to make a gamble.
No, sign
final occupancy.
Okay, final occupancy.
Permit.
Okay.
Permit. Not sale.
The reason, the idea behind that is we didn't want to get a whole bunch of builders to come in and say, I want to build. They come in, they get the 50% reduction, and then take years to build, because then that defeats the purpose of trying to stimulate something. So that's why we put that clause in there of, you know, final occupancy permit, to make sure that the project does get completed. And then at the end of the project, then they would get their 50%, you know, return.
So you're not going to have many people in November, December qualify.
Right. Maybe in, you know, June, July, they would stop, you know, submitting permits or something because they wouldn't be able to get it completed.
Director Burnett.
I heard some council members asking, and Council Member Goodrich was talking about this a little bit. One of the things that staff, if something like this were adopted, would want to make sure is that our staff, our inspectors and all of that, are not being called out to sites that really aren't ready with a deadline looming, where the staff member then has to make a decision, do I do right by the contractor or do I do right by the city? So the goal would be that the contractors identify fairly early on, in fall of 2012 or 2011, whichever way we go, that these folks are going to be calling for their final occupancy or their final inspections in fall, so that the staff member can go out, the inspector can go out and identify a punch list so that everything is done, so that we're not having to talk about bonding for final occupancy or not allowing a final occupancy that's really not ready. So how long does that take? It depends on the contractor. What, as with anything else, I'm going to file my taxes on April 14th. And I think that contractors are probably kind of the same way, where if they know that December 31st is a deadline, we're going to start getting a lot of calls on December 30th. This way, the deadline is around Halloween or so, and then we can work and finish it.
So we don't make Mr. Smith stand up. Any more questions for Mr. Smith? No. Okay. Thank you, sir. Well said. Councilperson Ingram, and then Feria, and then Malpezzi.
Can I ask the question I wanted to ask half an hour ago? I just wanted to make a comment about the fact that I've heard it say that the market is driven by various things, but the market is also driven by infrastructure. We just finished, correct me if I'm wrong, Bo, is it called the Northwest Regional Booster Station? Yeah. Yeah. We just completed that, 2009? At a cost of
$1 million,
$1.1 million, which was paid out of the water fund. Yeah. Walking through our new house a couple of weeks ago with a contractor, and he mentioned that he is now just finally starting to be able to build again up on that ridge line because of that booster station. Until then, they were out of water. They built six houses, maxed out the water system. They had almost no water pressure in those six houses for over a year. They finished that booster station. Now he can finish building out that section of lots. So if we didn't have the money to pay for that booster station, my house wouldn't be built. So, again, it's that two-edged sword. We use those fees to improve services in the city that allows people to build. And if you don't have the ability to build it because you don't have the services, what's the point? Okay?
Councilor Speria, and then Malpezzi.
I don't know. Maybe it's a question for Greg. You're right. I don't know. Do we have any way of knowing how many houses we have, like the inventory in Ferndale of houses that are new homes that aren't sold? that, you know, that are on the market that are brand new.
Are you saying develop lots or finished homes?
No, like finished homes. You know, here we are, you know, here we are potentially discussing, you know, a way to simulate more new houses getting built.
We could probably get that on the next meeting. We get that from the
real estate. I'd like to know, you know, if we're going to be talking about trying to stimulate building more homes. It's like how many homes do we have that are sitting empty that are brand new?
But is that only homes? Are you asking for the homes that are kind of like ours that have never been occupied?
Would you
like brand new homes? I'd like to know.
Would you like a realtor's quick opinion on that?
Sure, if a realtor is here that has their quick opinion on that.
Never been on
that.
Back by put you right on the spot there, huh?
Ask me a statistic.
Chet Kenoria.
Exactly how many.
Chet Kenoria with Windermere Real Estate, 515 West Bakerview. It's our office. To answer that question, I'd have to look up, and I could tell you real quickly. I could tell you tomorrow what that would be. But, you know, I was thinking about it as you're talking about the market and what drives the market. You know, about the only business, I guess you could say, that isn't market-driven by cost or by what is the federal government. You know, you as in, you know, in the city of Ferndale, you've got a budget. You work within your budget. I think everybody should be here at a council meeting to listen how you struggle with making ends meet, and to decide where you're going to go with the dollars you're going to spend. And you do a great job at that. I think, you know, when you look at incentives and what causes people to react, you know, when the federal government came out with the $8,000 tax incentive, that was a huge boom for real estate and for buyers. And that was an incentive to buy. A lot of people in Whatcom County, and obviously all across the country, bought homes that would not have bought home had that not been there. You know, I represent five developers in a subdivision in Ferndale, 78 lots. And those lots originally started at mid-130s. I think we're approaching 140. And that hit the ceiling, nothing happened. The market, just about that time they came on, changed drastically. We dropped it, thought, well, 120 might be that number to make it happen. We dropped it to 110. We thought, what's the sweet spot in this? It's got to be 99 to make it work. We dropped it to 99, nothing happened. 88, 79, 59.9 now is the price that you can buy a fully developed lot. This is in Skyview off the South Church. Gorgeous subdivision. Lots average, you know, 8,000 square feet. Water, sewer, gas. I mean, beautiful views and beautiful infrastructure and a great place to live in. It's 10 minutes from Bellas Fair. Actually 9 minutes from my office on Bakerview. So we're a bedroom community in Ferndale, obviously, of Bellingham. And I live on toward the south end of Lake Whatcom, and it takes me 20 minutes to get to, this is what I tell buyers. It takes me 20 minutes to get from my house, I live in Bellingham, to my office. But you can live in Ferndale and this development be in Bellas Fair in 9 minutes, 10 minutes. So we brought the prices to $59.9 and $69.9 for the outer lots that up against the green space, thinking this is the sweet spot, this is going to make this happen. And it really, at that point, it really was. I thought we'd get a lot of builders coming in and just, they'd still, you know, buy five here, five there. It really didn't happen. We've been at that number now for, probably the last 8 months, I would guess. We're selling lots. We're about halfway through the subdivision. And I would say if you look at a reduction, temporary reduction in your the impact fees, water, sewer, hookups, would that cause the question you'd have to ask yourself, would that cause people to react and come out from Bellingham and build, whether it be a custom home or a spec house? And that's really the question. And when you see people, builders, that will go in and put in, as Chad was talking about, pay up front, even though they may not be building till spring, but to pay or save 10% on their fees, 10%, what would 50% do? And I think that's what he was talking about. The people that did rush forward because of the 10% increase, you know, are probably disadvantage, you know, if this did pass, because they paid they initially reacted in order to save, and actually they're going to get hurt if this happens. That's probably what Chad was talking about there. But the question is, what is this going to ultimately do to spur people that wouldn't build now if you did that? That's the question. And I think it would be impactful. I think one thing you could do in your due diligence is find out what happened up in Blaine. I don't know exactly what happened up there when they dropped their fees. But
so you have a realtor that's maybe committing for, you're still looking for the answer to that question?
Yeah, just a rough idea of how many new homes that haven't been lived in yet, new homes that have been built in Ferndale. You know, what's our inventory like now if we're trying to stimulate building more houses?
Well, I can give you just in Skyview alone. We have 6 houses, of which now we have, there's new starts happening in there right now. We have 2 pending, so 4 available at this point. In a subdivision of 78 lots. That's one.
Oh, just in your.
No, that's
in
one subdivision.
Subdivision.
Right.
Okay.
Churchill Estate has.
Yeah, they've got a few.
3, I think.
So it'd be interesting.
I could give you.
I could
get that tomorrow.
Our next committee meeting is Wednesday. I mean,
sure,
you know,
sure.
By then.
What you're really asking then is new homes that are available for sale, finished new homes, finished new homes that are standing.
They can
okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure, I can do that.
Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, thank you for being here. And I'm glad that you're here. So there is some building occurring in Skyview. Is that what it's
Skyview,
called?
Skyview.
Right. With our current fees and structure.
Right.
So somebody is motivated to build.
What's happened? What's motivated that is the cost of lots. That's what brought builders in to make it happen at that number. Because you know you can build a house at that number and the margins are slim, but you know it's doable.
What is the hard cost of putting a lot in down there?
I'll say this. The developers, you know, at the point when they started watching prices drop, it was, and it's all market driven, obviously, because this is not the profit margin is, that's long gone. Now it's, let's get this sold and, you know, go on with life. Right?
Because you can't put those lots in
for
$60,000.
No. Your land costs have come down, but your infrastructure costs to build and the cost of, you know, everything that goes along with the project, nobody's going to, you know, that's where you have to look ahead, too, to stimulate activity on the existing lots that you have to bring inventory down, as Chad was saying, so that people in the next go-around, when the next boom happens, and it will happen. I've been doing this for 34 years, and it's always, I've seen, you know, cycles, and this is a cycle.
And you just reminded us that you put the infrastructure in. Granted, you're hooking to existing conveyance and infrastructure, but you're... You put development in, you're putting all the pipes in, paying for all that,
right.
The code, and so on and so forth.
It's a risky business, and, you know, the profit margins are there in a good market, but when the market turns, you know, you end up with a situation where, you know, it's dicey.
Questions for Mr. Knoyer or general statements?
General questions.
Okay, so we're okay. Any more questions for Mr. Knoyer while he's up here?
No.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
So I'll email you the amount of existing new homes
we'll
for Ferndale. Okay.
Great.
Under construction or just new? Probably new existing standing?
New existing.
Okay.
Inventory there.
Okay, thank you.
Write it down for
him. Councilor Theria.
My question is, I don't know, either you or your Greg, and it's something that Mr. Knoyer actually just brought up. I know that this is going, my understanding is this is going back to planning and land use or finance and admin. It's going back to committee after this. But to make sure we do have that information from Blaine, I'm not sure exactly how Blaine's wording was for what they passed for their reduction in their impact fees or their timing, but if we could know for that committee exactly what it is they passed and timing of that, and then what they did see happen there in numbers for permits that came in.
And the only thing I'd ask is, so you think about that now, is what we've done before is we've made a commitment to Planning Commission, we've made a commitment to staff. I'm going to kind of see, I want to see a nodding of heads that staff wants to do research, that this is going to go back to
call.
Committee, or if you don't have a general counsel wanting to do that, I don't want to put pressure on staff to do things that isn't going to go anywhere. So keep that in mind. Councilperson Malpezzi.
I'm going to hold my question until it gets back to whichever committee, and I thought it was in finance and admin.
Is it finance and admin?
I think we directed finance and
I
admin.
I can't remember which one it was.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Okay.
I don't see anything that it should not be in finance administration.
Yeah, but I'd like to see this discussion go on. Same time, I don't want to see it drag on. So
sure. So why don't I see if any more audience members want to speak, because I know they've been sitting there patient.
I know Mr. Kramer wants to speak.
No, you...
It's already spoken. We don't need to hear anybody twice.
No.
We don't need to hear anybody twice.
But we'd love to hear the person behind you.
I got the gist.
My name's Bill Kramer, and I live at 1442 Sunset Avenue, Ferndale. And I work with a group of fellas, three of us, and we're land developers, and we've developed actually joint ventured with the Skyview Track and ran a 3,000-foot-long, 15-inch sewer main down there. It cost them hundreds of thousands, and we also put in an oversized water main to go up Douglas Road a few hundred feet past our plat to connect water to both those plats. And we have the plat just up above Skyview. It's called the South Douglas Long Plat. There's a total of 61 lots there. And right now we're in for, we just had 10 on the first plat. First phase, and now we're into the city for on 17 more lots to get going this spring. And it's tough out there, you know. We could use any, you know, speaking of impact fees, the developer pays half of the impact fees up front to record his development. You know, like I think mine are for this next 17 lots are going to be $57,000 right in there. And I hear they've gone up some more since. Is that right, Yuri?
Probably.
Yeah, and since I got the last quote, which was two or three months ago, I got a quote, probably longer than that. You know, things just keep going up and up. And then I also build, too, because we can't sell lots to anybody. The developments I did back in 06 and 07, we sold the lots. Really, it was great. Man, I didn't have to hardly build anything. But now we got to build our own houses because nobody's buying lots. And they're selling lots down below cheaper than I can develop my lots. You know, I'm just up above them there a little bit. And, you know, I'm going to have $75,000 apiece in those lots, hard costs, counting land. And they're selling them down below me for $15,000. So I'm really at a disadvantage, $15,000 less. But we're going ahead and doing it anyway because we got to move our lots. We're sitting on a probably... Oh man, 40 and this new 17 would be 57, and we got about 50 more lots we got to develop too in the next couple of years to satisfy the banks that we got in hock too. So, anyway, anything you can do to help us survive, you know, for the gentleman here building rental units. Well, I'm really glad I did that in the last 25 years. That's what I'm living on now. Is I was dependent on what I was making out of the development business. I'd been broke 3 years ago, so I'm still here. I've been here for 40 years. I hope I can survive this, and this has been my life, building and developing land, and it's been a good life. Built homes for a lot of people. Well, and I do appreciate the city staff, the building department, the planning department. They're right on top of things. I really do. Well, thanks for
questions
me.
For Mr. Kramer, and thank you for what you have done for
Ferndale. I can't help it, Mr. Kramer. We have you here. What's your feelings on taking Church Road and connecting it?
Ooh, I don't think that's fair.
Well, listen, he's been on the edge
if
before.
If we survive and do the third phase of our development, we'll get it within 600 feet of Mountain View Road.
That's a good enough answer.
If yeah,
we
survive, exactly.
That can of worms.
Let's.
We got to survive first.
Yeah.
No, Mel's way ahead of you. Okay. Any more questions?
I don't have a specific question.
Okay, Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Kramer
can sit down.
General.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Kramer. Thank you, Mr. Kramer. Mr. Hansen.
That was your pay.
Well, a couple of things I've heard this evening that I want to, one I want to rebut. There was two or three of the speakers talked about the demographics of adding population that a retail business would look out there and say, well, if you're growing and you're bringing in the population, then we'll settle in Ferndale in order to service that population. we better work on the 82% of the people that now live in Ferndale. That's some 8,200 of our 10,000 population. It's more than that because our population is 11. That don't shop here. 82% of the sales tax revenue, that is the potential sales tax revenue, goes somewhere else other than Ferndale. That if you add a couple of hundred homes, that 3.5 people per home, you're adding 700 residents, 82% of which will probably shop in Bellingham, because that's the way it's working. What needs to be stimulated is retail business for the 82% of the population that's not shopping here right now. Now there's a whole bunch of arguments that could be had one way or the other. If you buy your building materials in Ferndale or have your building materials delivered to Ferndale, that's going to help that percentage. So there's lots of ways that additional building helps the community. The concrete's going to be purchased out here at Ferndale building or Ferndale ready mix probably, or if it's delivered from Cowden, we still get the sales tax revenue on that. So building is a good stimulant, but we've got to figure out a way to get our folks to shop here as opposed to elsewhere. And just a few more folks buying houses is not going to do it. There's some other factors involved in that. That was one point. I was on this council. I think I'm the only one that was on this council when we blew the lid off of a sanitary service out in front of City Hall, our sanitary sewer service, out in front of City Hall about 5 years ago. The infiltration into the infrastructure of groundwater around the Thanksgiving weekend blew the lid off. All of a sudden, and those of you who were building here then remember this and weren't very happy with us, we shut building down in this community for, I believe, 6 to 8 months. We absolutely said, if you're going to tie into the sewer line that goes through downtown, until we can get the Southwest sewer line built, you are not going to be permitted to build a house in the area that runs through that sewer pipe, because we'd we put too much effluent in the sewer line. The Southwest sewer was built, and fortunately, we had the cash in the bank. Although we did charge an additional $1,000, which is still in effect, for all those who use the Southwest sewer interceptor, so that both lines could be free. And we continue to charge that. And I don't know whether, Brent, your proposal includes changing that from $1,000 or what. Inflation has risen.
$1,322.
Okay. So that one would continue on. It would not be, because it's part of the impact. It's part of the hookup fee. It's a surcharge of $1,300 on the hookup fee for all of the people that use Southwest, which is the entire hillside. Don't forget that without our sewer impact fees, we wouldn't have been able to build the Southwest sewer, so we probably still would be on a moratorium of not building houses until we got that money together. That's the kind of thing that impact fees pay for. Just to tail the end of that, I think giving breaks and a stimulus to get things going in the community is a very good thing. I haven't heard any solutions tonight on how we're going to pay the bills. That's what I'm searching for. Give me a way to pay the bills with this, and that's the first thing that should have been said at the microphone tonight. Here's how I suggest you pay the bills when you cut your fees.
Administrator, yes.
On the heels of that, I mentioned that we do have that 50% rebate for people who build coastal water sewer plant. Under the win-win concept that Councilman Hansen just mentioned, tomorrow the county council is taking up our EDI application for affordable housing. If you remember, the way that works, it works anywhere in the county. If a developer wants to build an affordable housing unit, very soon here, they'll be able to apply to the city of Ferndale. It doesn't have to be built in Ferndale, it can be anywhere in the county. Apply to the city of Ferndale, and the county EDI program will pay all of your impact fees and your connection fees, 100%. not 50%, 100% if you're building affordable housing units. We heard that a 50% rebate might actually make some units more affordable. Whether a 100% rebate would actually encourage others to come forward and build some units in the city, but the win-win is that the developers don't have to carry that cost and the cities remain whole because the money flows from the county to the city or to the county or wherever it might be. So I just wanted to bring that up because I was thinking about, you know, okay, what other programs could we have? And I started thinking about what we already have, and that's a program that we don't already have, but hopefully this time tomorrow night we will have it in place for not only Ferndale but for the entire county.
And endorsed by the BIA.
Can we move this
okay, do we have any more people from the audience that would like to speak on the subject? You don't get to. Anybody else?
One bite out of the apple.
We've talked about it.
Okay, one bite out of the apple. Okay, Councilperson Goodrich.
I'd like to make a motion that we move this now back to the Finance Committee for further discussion at that point.
Second.
Okay, been moving seconded.
Just a quick comment, okay. Sir. We need to dispose of this rather quickly. And the reason we need to dispose of this rather quickly is right now we've got at least a dozen builders in the audience that probably aren't going to make applications into our building department to build homes until we get this resolved, one way or the other. I wouldn't. If I were you, I would say I'm going to wait until I find out what they do. So we need to dispose of this rather quickly over the next 2 to 3 weeks if we can.
So after the vote, and we'll announce the time of that that committee. So I think it's at 10:30, but I'm not sure. Okay, Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I 100% agree with Councilmember Hansen that we do need to up or down this thing in the next short while, whenever we can do that. I also want to say I want to thank the developers and real estate people for coming out and discussing with us tonight. I came to this meeting favorable towards the idea, as you well know, and even more so after hearing discussion tonight. And I guess one thing I want to encourage council to consider is the dynamic impact of something like this. I don't think this has to be a zero-sum game. I think the revenues will come, and I hope that – I appreciate the fast typing going on over there by our clerk. He needs a quieter keyboard. I've never heard so loud. I mean, it's fast. It's blazing. But I'm looking forward to reading through the minutes, and I think there's some very good arguments for us to consider that. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed. Okay, motion carries.
Thank you.
Back to committee. Now, council, then I would ask that you also put the other issue behind this, the low income. Now, before you all leave, I might want to know when that committee is in case you want to talk about it again.
10:30 next Wednesday.
So 10:30 next Wednesday at Ferndale City Hall. 10:30 next Wednesday at Ferndale City Hall.
Not this coming Wednesday.
A week and a half.
Week and a half. 9 days from now. 16.
Check our website. Okay, council, I'd like to put that other issue on hold until you discuss this issue. So are you...
Low income water sewer discount program?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, just in case?
We're done.
So we're going to have all budget implicated
This is expanding. We give a discount to senior citizens
on their utility bills. Not new
we're asking to expand that, or if you consider expanding it to low income. But if you're going to have, I mean, there are only so many budget implications you can have before it really totally destroys.
So we need to put this on hold until we decide.
I would appreciate put this on hold. Please.
I would move that we table this agenda bill 1102003
okay,
until
second.
We.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed.
Right there. Until the
26th.
Mr. Ingram had a, because you don't want it to be just tabled.
Right.
He said tabled until, and I'd like to hear the end of that.
Until we resolve
the next meeting.
Thank you. That way it comes back up on the agenda.
Okay. Back under control. Councilperson
Perry. We're always under control.
No, it was he lost the control, not us.
So we want this resolved by the next council.
Yeah. Yes.
And I agree.
Quiet over there.
I'm trying to talk. I had asked earlier about having Yori or Greg or somebody contact Blaine, and you said, like, I couldn't just ask them that unless everybody agreed we were going to still discuss it.
No, and
so since we're still going to discuss it, is that officially correct. That's something, information that we're going to have, because otherwise I'll call them myself. Information that we're going to have for the committee about Blaine. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
Houseperson Malpezzi is next.
Oh, no, I was, I didn't have anything.
Houseperson
Malpezzi. I forgot to. I talked to Mayor / Councilmember Monteonians today, and it was a five-year program. They're the second year into a five-year program. It was across the board impact fees, zero impact fees, so on and so forth, and she didn't have a strong opinion as to how that's going so far.
Well, we'll get statistics. Okay, moving on. Mayor reports. So Wednesday, 7:30 to 9 a.m. at Babes, you can meet and talk with our distinguished court commissioner, Mr. Jim Jorgensen, in downtown Ferndale, 7:30 to 9, Wednesday at Babes, probably upstairs. Mark your calendars. Pat probably wants to come. Tuesday the 15th, I'd really like some counsel there because you need to see this program. This is the Nooksack Loop Trail. They're probably going to go vote before the voters, and it's 5 p.m. in council committee chambers. So Tuesday the 15th, Nooksack Loop Trail, 5 p.m. in Ferndale. That one?
5 p.m. Ferndale. Here? This
no, morning? No. In our committee. Where we have committee. City Hall. I'll be out of town the 18th and 19th. So, Paul, you're in charge. Are you around?
Nope.
No?
State rest.
Do you have a second person?
Wild guess.
Right on.
What
so
I will be in the other Ferndale cookie.
So if the city falls apart and you're gone, I'm gone. Who's next?
Greg. Oh,
second.
That's terrible. Did you hear that freight train coming? Yeah, he makes it.
Wouldn't that would that be right? Would that be right, Sam?
Made you guys. You got to sleep in the city limits those two
okay,
nights.
Okay, 23rd. The 23rd of this month. It's a Wednesday night from 5:30 to 6:30, and the public is now invited. The Pioneer Pavilion unveiling before the library moves in. So you want to look at the building before the library moves in. 5:30 to 6:30, you're all invited. Anyone else want to come?
Can we bring our skates?
Megan said she's providing ice cream cones.
Yay.
Bring our skates. You want everybody skating on that newly finished floor.
Not the ice cream, just the cones.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for mayor comments. Council comments. Councilperson Goodrich.
Two things. I got a comment and a question. Can we get those all those dates and times and stuff you just rattled off? Can you get us an email in the morning or something with that?
It'll be in the minutes, and they'll
can't,
be out
they can't write
by
down.
Noon.
Okay.
By midnight tonight.
Okay. I appreciate that because my calendar's on my computer at home. And
there's one more that we need to.
Yeah.
Well, that would come out of your council reports.
It's not a council thing.
Oh, yeah, it's a staff thing.
What is it?
Next week. Over there at WeQ.
The WeQ thing.
17th.
That would I would wait for the community development director's
okay.
report.
Okay. All right.
Oh.
Okay, and I do have a committee report. I'm going to pass these out to everybody.
Oh, thank you very much.
At the Economic Development Commission meeting, we had a presentation on the new deep water terminal that they're, the Pacific Gateway Terminal that they're looking to build out at Cherry Point. And SS Marine came and gave the presentation. It's a three-ship bulk terminal port pier that would be built out there, and they're starting their EIS process. It'll be all coming in by train. And the trains would bring the whatever the bulk happened to be at the time. It could be anything that can come in by train. It could be coal, it could be wheat, it could be cement, whatever the commodities market is hot.
What's
it would be.
What's their hearing on competing with a big one up in
Canada?
That's the
maxed
idea.
Out. They're maxed out.
They're maxed out. Yeah.
And if you can look here, they have a rail idea here that it would be a great port. the rail lines are already basically here. There would be some infrastructure that would have to be done. What they are looking for is they're starting their EIS process. So something as we as a council may want to consider is a resolution to support it and then forward that on. They're already getting some comments and things from other entities, but seeing it's going to be in our backyard, they would like that. They've also said that they would be willing to come to council meeting and give a shortened presentation, not the long one that they gave the Economic Development Commission, but a short presentation on what this port means as far as jobs and to the economy of the area. So
I'd like to hear that.
So are you suggesting we could put it on the agenda if yes. we get right, consensus from council?
Sure. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great project.
So I'm getting a nod, consensus from council, and allocate them 15 minutes?
Yeah. 15 minutes will probably take a half hour.
Well, yeah. 15 minutes presentation. That's not
right,
right. your questions.
Right.
Okay.
Any other council reports? Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I put on your spot just a reminder that this is the annual operation. Excuse me, Project Homeless Connect is Thursday, March 3rd, and the mayor participated last year, and I participated last year. And
March, what did you say? You didn't say March 3rd.
Didn't I say March 3rd?
Yeah, you did say
March 3rd. Isn't it March 3rd?
Thursday,
no, it's in April.
I thought it was March 3rd.
March 3rd. Is it, excuse me, March 3rd? Sure, okay.
I think it's March 3rd.
It is March 3rd.
It's March 3rd.
Anyway, you can register. There's a website there, and I took one of my daughters, and it was a good experience for her and for me, and we're all invited. So with a couple hours, the whole day, whatever. Good. And I also want to just say, because I got the mic, is I've really appreciated our new city clerk, his professionalism and expertise, and I teased him about the loud typing over there, but thoroughness of minutes and responsiveness to emails.
I got some WD-40 we could spray that keyboard with.
Yeah, so, and how he's handled himself in some more heated exchange with the public. Well done.
That's your warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, well, I was going to make my comments feel. A little hurtful. I was going to second your keyboard motion to buy him a quieter keyboard. And along the same lines, our plumber in that bathroom needs to fix the light. The light keeps on coming out.
I know, it's a
bathroom, though. He can take it. There it goes. It heard me, you know, so I don't know if it...
I don't know. Sorry. It goes dark a little too quick. You're exactly correct.
Good deal.
You missed the mayor's boondocks.
And finally, I'm sorry I missed this.
Ingram, Mr. Mutchler has before.
No, Malpezzi.
Does.
Yeah, no, am I getting that much gray hair?
Yeah,
all right.
Well, I just think
meeting's gone way too
bad.
Sorry I missed it early in the appropriate time, but the minutes from the last council meeting seem to be missing the, roll call and of everybody. So,
it would be amended. You guys just approved on consent. And I'll offer them up to you for next consent.
Yeah, we can just all say put it on there.
Yes, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Okay, next up was Councilperson Zimmerman.
Well, thank you for the flowers. It was a nice gesture. Chief, I had a question. In Sunday's paper, there was quite an issue, an article front page regarding gang activity, and I've had a couple people ask me, how is this impacting Ferndale, and where's our concern at, and what's our plan?
We have one officer that has been withdrawn from a task force that dealt with the issues that you are speaking about as they relate to drugs, so that our involvement is not as primary as it has been in the past. But we do have a detective that regularly interacts with the gang coordinators for the county, the city of Bellingham, and other agencies that belong to a gang task force, a regional task force. So we understand the nature and extent of our gang issues, and we stay abreast of them and coordinate those with other agencies.
I know it's a very complex subject, so maybe another time if there's if it's necessary.
It, it is,
people
it's
ask
not
me what were the impacts.
It is, the issue is one of some grave concern
mm-hmm.
because gangs are moving into the area.
Mm-hmm.
There is no question about that. And so we need to be able to dedicate it somewhat the resources necessary for us to keep abreast of those issues.
Well, as chairman of the neighborhood and public safety committee, people are asking me, you know,
yes.
what's our plan?
Absolutely.
So anything that you can relay to
absolutely.
Me that we may need
to
do
to
address.
Interact with you on that. Thank you. May I speak on the other topic
sure.
just quickly while I'm here and out of turn? As you may have read, one of our officers, Rich Turner, was injured Sunday night in a single car accident in which his vehicle left the roadway. He is in serious condition. I visited today with his nurse. He is in the ICU unit. Some speculation about the conditions that existed at the time. There is nothing official at this point. But we obviously will be following the exact circumstances that surrounded that mishap. Our primary concern right now, of course, is that Rich Turner recovers. He is indeed in serious condition. That will have an impact operationally on us. We have lost one officer through retirement. Now we've lost at least for a significant period of time a second officer. We had predicted that the needs of the department would be at 20 officers at this time in 2011. And because of budget problems, of course, we didn't get the 20th. We have since retired the 19th, and now we are temporarily down another officer as well. To maintain the shifts and to maintain safety, we will have to use a greater quantity of overtime than we have in the past. But we use it sparingly, and we have attempted to save. I think the city will verify that in our use of overtime in training and all other matters. So we're going to keep our costs down, but they necessarily will increase.
Any other council reports? Councilperson Hanson?
Very quickly, Thursday morning, if you're not doing anything at 8 a.m. in the council chambers at for the county, WTA is having a one-item discussion. Essentially, it's whether and under what circumstances the WTA will provide Sunday service and how much Bellingham will have to pay for it. They went through the whole rigmarole, we were talking about it before the council meeting, of establishing that Bellingham would, if they passed the 0.2% sales tax increase, that they would, in fact, contract with WTA. They forgot to ask WTA. And so if the vote were taken without discussion, I suspect there would be three or four votes against it right now, against providing Sunday service. I'm not sure how it would come out after the discussion. One of the things that's on the table is as WTA recovers with the sales tax, and they will, and we add back service that has been cut, do we add it back in the same order that we took it away? Because Whatcom County gets 20% of the service, yet pays 35% of the bill currently. And what used to be a very happy board of directors has become Bellingham versus. And it's not real fun anymore to go to a WTA board meeting, let's put it that way. But there will be quite a discussion. Read about it in the paper. I'm sure that Jared will be there to report on it.
Councilperson Ingram?
Yeah, Mel, could you cover my first and last committee meetings next
sure.
Wednesday? And John, could you cover my police ad hoc for me?
Very next one?
Yeah, very well. Just the next one.
Yes.
Councilperson Malpezzi?
reminded me. I had asked Councilmember Munchler if he was interested in taking over one of my two committees, the finance and admin. And unless there's any objection, or somebody else that's not on finance and admin that's really dying to get on there, since John only's got one committee assignment, you know, I'd like to make that happen.
I move that we confirm the Steve's request.
I will second that.
Okay, move to second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries.
I move too slow, obviously. Steve talks. I go to him anyway, right?
Maybe I should ask John. Are you okay?
I just can't.
He's big on the chair slouch right now.
All right, department heads.
Where's Ted Wood when we need him? Okay, committee reports. Community Development Director. Do you have an announcement?
I do have an announcement. On February 17th, which is two Thursdays from now. Two Thursdays? One Thursday.
Two
Thursdays. At WeQ, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., possibly extending to 9 p.m., we are going to have our planned action workshop meeting. We sent a mailing out to every single property owner based on the current assessor's database in that area. We've also created a website that I'm not sure if it is up. So that's dedicated specifically to the planned action, and we're going to send out the dedicated web page for that too, where we're going to continually update it so anybody that has any questions about that planned action can go to it. On Wednesday, we are also releasing the first official step in the planned action, and that is a determination of significance. What that basically does is it informs the public that we expect that if the development that we are thinking is going to come does come, it will have a significant impact on that area and on the environment, and that then triggers the environmental impact statement, which is, or the environmental impact study, which is what the planned action is wrapped around. Ultimately, council have the ability to do an ordinance as well. So that's one announcement. I hope that everybody can make it there and let anybody that you know of invite them to it, because the key is when we're talking about development there, it could be almost anything as far as the scale of it, and it's important that people know that now and get involved now, because if they wait until a development is actually proposed, they might not have the same ability to make their comments, because that's what the purpose of this is for. The second comment that I had is this week is the last week that we have to finish our briefings for our pending urban growth area defense of the restoration of the urban growth area that was put in. Our attorneys inform us that the deadline is going to be Friday to submit their briefings, really Tuesday tomorrow to supplement the record for any of our vendors, but then we will be able to go in. We think we have a strong case, and we've been working closely with Whatcom County, our co-defendants, on this, and we think that we have, that the council's action was the right thing to do and is backed up even more so now by the evidence on record.
Yuri, what's the status of the Residential Eagle program?
Right now, we have not made progress on it, just because we've been working on a number of other things.
Yeah.
I would guess second quarter you're going to get a good draft.
Mr. Mitchler?
On the UGA defense, is this a future-wise? Is taken, are other groups as well? What's the word I'm looking for?
The
bad guys.
The petitioners.
I would strike that.
Who are the players?
The players. No bad guys.
The folks that petitioned against the county council's action include FutureWise. FutureWise is a part. FutureWise
better known as the enemy.
Okay, we strike that one too.
What old you do that thing?
FutureWise is generally an anti-sprawl group, formerly Thousand Friends of Washington. Their main contention is that Ferndale's urban growth area is too large to meet the residential needs expected in the next 20 years. David Stahlheim, a former planning director of Whatcom County, is also has submitted his own petition. He's joined with former county council member Dan McShane, as well as a number of
others. You don't have enough time to do this issue, and it's 8:54.
There are quite a few other ones. Those are the main ones.
Thank you.
You don't have enough time. Okay, department reports. City administrator.
A couple of quick things.
It better be quick.
I mentioned tomorrow, 11 a.m., that the county council chamber, they're taking up the EDI application. Mention that. This Wednesday at 8 o'clock, if you're not able to make it to the WTA three-ring circus.
Oh, that's Thursday.
Okay. Well, this Thursday, then, at 8 a.m., at 10 o'clock, on the 10th at 8 a.m., at City Hall, we're having this Thursday, the 10th, at 8 a.m., too many numbers all at once, we're having a representative from the Social Security Administration come in and give a presentation to staff and, for that matter, anyone else who's interested in knowing more about Social Security benefits and the Social Security system. So from 8 to 9 o'clock, there'll be a representative there to answer any questions you might have.
That's it? Good job.
There to answer questions.
Both.
Presentation, there you go. Okay. Treasurer.
Besides the big surprise Saturday, the invoice from the fire district, nothing.
Ooh, you got me for a second. City clerk.
You already have it in the packet, but the one thing is just an informational item on the fact that the Whatcom County Auditor's Office has switched the formula for calculating election costs.
Yeah.
Prior to this, they were calculating the cost based on how many items you had on the ballot as well as the number of registered voters in your jurisdiction. It's now just the number of registered voters. They did this because they no longer do jurisdiction-based voters pamphlets. That was really where the cost came. You know, when a jurisdiction had a lot of issues on the ballot, their voters pamphlet back when we did the punch cards were larger, so it cost more, so they were allocating those in a different way. They've changed that. Whatcom County Auditor Shirley Forslaw believes it's more equitable now. And the bottom line for you guys is that it does not appear to be a significant impact on the costs to the city of Ferndale for elections.
Cool. So we could two for the price of one. Two or three issues in there.
But as many as you want, and just as usual, if you do a special election, you're going to bear the brunt of the cost anyway. So this discussion really is about general elections, normal time for us. Put as many issues as you want on the ballot. It's going to be distributed evenly among jurisdictions.
Public Works, less than 4 minutes.
Public Works staff have been really busy working on the sewer comp plan update. We had a brief discussion at the last committee meeting. So at the next committee meeting, we'll have a more detailed discussion, and I'll be bringing forward more information on that. We also have a study session scheduled March 7th, and so then I'll be bringing information to the full city council on our update, and then a public hearing will follow that. A major component of this update is our capital improvement plan. So we're hoping by the end of this week, I should have drafts out to you so you can start taking a look at that.
Okay, great.
Move to adjourn.
All favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Hey, we made it 4:95.
Started doodling between you and Greg. A doodling time.
Oh, everybody's
doodles.
He doodles all the way
up. So, my question is that Gary?
Yeah. On a vacation or?
Right there.
I don't know who's that.
Is that